now.
Welcome to WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Well, good evening, everyone. Jolene, how are you?
Peter, doing fine.
Yeah, had a great weekend and all that?
Absolutely.
Saw a great movie last night called The Ghost Rider.
Yeah, and what is that about again?
It's actually about a guy who's hired to ghostwrite. In other words, do the actual writing for the ex-prime minister of England. Sort of a Tony Blair. It's fictional. Tony Blair figure. And starts off a little slow, but then, whoa.
It gets good.
CIA's in it.
And didn't you say there was a little slamming of Bush and Blair going on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I already told you this.
Well, we had a short conversation when we saw each other earlier today.
We did. You got some rave notices here in the midst of someone slamming me.
What, on email?
Yeah. One of these climate change deniers. He says at the end,
he believes he is correct, and you are so wrong. I mean, to the point where, was he all in caps?
Me? No.
Okay.
Me? It's not that I think I'm correct. It's that all the climatologists, all the serious scientists know that there's climate change and it's human generated. But anyway, so he wrote me, then I wrote him back and I said, I can't write huge, we get so much email, I can't write these huge things. So I said, look, if you've had your say, I'll have mine, that's it. And he wrote, I have to answer. And so I didn't even read what he said, but I looked at the end, and it's from Chris, who writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The past few weeks, you have had Jolene Jordan take over the show. A nice change, and she did a great job. Her views were well taken, and it increased the number of non-military, increased the number of non-military or pot smokers calling in. Now, wait a minute, I'm not sure the construction of this.
It increased
the number of non-military. So that means or pot smokers. Anyway, you may want to switch roles with her to restore your credibility.
I never saw this. Oh, this is a
from
riot.
Chris. It's okay, you know. Just I mean, I have no ego. Just the paycheck. So if you want to do it, it's absolutely up to you. But it's all about the money, as usual. Apparently, Social Security is going to have to start cashing the government IOUs. You know, there were these $2.5 trillion in this Social Security trust fund. And the government has been borrowing on it for years and years, mainly Bush. But, of course, Obama's had to do it because he didn't change any of the policies that drained the surplus. That is to say, does this make sense to anybody? Let me just tell you this. You know, we pay payroll taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up to $106,000. If you make over that, you don't pay any more on it. But anyway, and that finances Medicare and it finances Social Security. So when your grandparents retire or you retire or whoever, that's what it gets financed for. And it was supposed to be one generation financing the one ahead of it. But actually, there was so much came into it that they had this enormous surplus, and so it was just golden forever. But because Bush and, I don't know if Clinton got in on this as well, but I mean, whatever, if Clinton did, it was Bush that really put the capper on it. Because he cut taxes for the rich.
I mean, yes.
To the tune of trillions, and he created these unnecessary wars to the tune of trillions as well. So guess what? We have a major deficit, and it looks like now we are in some trouble with the Social Security Administration. So let's see. For more than two decades, Social Security collected more money in payroll taxes than it paid out in benefits, billions more each year. But for the first time since the 80s, the retirement program is projected to pay out more in benefits than it collects in taxes, nearly $29 billion more. So, it sounds like a good time to start tapping the nest egg, but apparently there's a problem because the federal government already spent that money over the years on other programs, preferring to borrow from Social Security rather than foreign creditors. And if you know, you might be saying, what in the hell is he talking about? Who cares? I mean, we're talking about the bedrock finances of the economic system under which we all live. It's not even just a matter of whether or not we're going to have enough money when we retire or whether your parents are going to have enough money when they retire. This is the fundamental bedrock of this society. And Reaganomics under the Bush regime made sure that we were going deep into debt. You know, I just heard some right-wing whack job, the same guy here for 5 minutes.
On the way to work Sunday.
Every Sunday. And he said that this is all a plot of left-wing Democrats to bankrupt the system so that they can put in socialism.
Oh, is that okay? Well, yeah. that is so original. Where is he getting all of this?
So I'm thinking left-wing Democrats are trying to bankrupt the system so they can install socialism. And
there's that whole third world theory. Remember that crazy one?
Which one?
The one that I told you about, the guy we used to work with.
Yeah. And that,
they want to fund third world countries.
Oh.
Remember? So that's...
Oh, this is partly what the climate change deniers are all about.
Yeah.
That is part of... You know, I didn't understand this. In fact, at 1 a.m. Eastern, we have a guest, and she's going to talk about it. Because I say, why has this turned out to be this right-wing talking point, that climate change isn't real? I mean, it's so weird. I mean, of all the problems in the world, suddenly they're saying there's no such thing as climate change. And as I say in the interview, I recorded it, shouldn't you err on the side of caution is what I always say.
Always say.
Clean up everything, right? And then, we were wrong. Climate change is still continuing. Well, at least we have a better environment and we're not having as much pollutants in the air and all of that.
These people don't care, Peter.
Well, but there's something really strange going on. So that was it. Apparently, everything is this plot to bring in socialism. Would you just?
Yes.
Oh, you wanted to see me better.
I did.
Yeah, we do have some.
We have barriers.
Jolene,
hey, Peter.
Hey, great sweatshirt.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah. So anyway, we're talking about.
We moved into climate change in third world countries, but we were talking about.
We're talking about that the social security, about the debt, the deficit, all of that.
Now you might be scaring people because remember we've always said don't worry about Social Security. There's money there.
Well,
right?
We don't have it. Yeah, now it is looking like there's a problem. But, all right, there's a few things that we could do very, very easily. And I wonder who would object to this. You can call us at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Or you can email us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com if the lines are busy, which they're not right now, or if you're bashful. So anyway, here's a few things that I just jotted down that we wouldn't have to worry about Social Security or any number of other things that are financially generated. One is raise taxes. Oh, I forgot there's two other words here. Three other words. Raise taxes on the rich.
Oh, Peter, there you go.
Because not on the middle class, not on the working class, not on the poor, but on the wealthy, and particularly the ultra-wealthy, who are sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars and don't even move it around very much. So they put it into speculative capital, and they create all these bubbles on the stock market and what have you. So here's what you could do. Remember, Bush, the millionaire, lowered taxes on his buddies, on his other...
And himself.
But right. It was mostly... So then this was like the tune of $1 trillion. So at a minimum, get back to the pre-Bush tax levels for the wealthy. All right. Next thing you could do would be to end these damn wars. And we'll talk a little about that. These unnecessary wars that are going to wind up costing us $2 to $3 trillion. I don't even know that if we could do it right now, would it even cut into what we've spent and what we're going to have to keep spending. of course, cut military spending. This is insane. Well, I want to talk a little about that as well. It's up to like $700 billion officially, and in real, if you count everything within the budget, it's $1 trillion a year. Absolutely unnecessary, because we have to fight these intractable enemies that have what's their weapon system? Box cutters and the internet, right? And we're getting airplanes that cost $1 billion a piece, a couple thousand of them. And the last thing is, and this would be a little easier, and it shouldn't be quite as controversial, is to remove the cap on the payroll tax. Why does it stop at $106,000? I mean, if you make $200,000, why aren't you paying just like the people that make $105,000, right, or $55,000?
Yeah, I don't know why that ends. I don't get it.
Yeah, does anyone out there know that? I mean, this is so easy now. All you got to do is Google it properly. But how did the payroll cap... How did the cap on the payroll tax get set like that? And why is there a cap at all? All right. So, you know, I always think this is not very sexy radio, right? We should be talking...
I'm totally turned on. What are you talking about?
Sarah Palin's out of the news. Actually, she's got a
new reality show all about Alaska.
Come on.
She does. And it's going to be all about the wonders of Alaska.
That's all right.
Sure.
That's good.
But there's something hidden underneath all of that. She doesn't just do things like that. She's got an agenda.
Well, remember, she was always saying how awful the Canadian healthcare system was and how great ours.
There is something new. Go ahead.
Yeah. She admitted over the weekend that she used to get her treatment in Canada's single-payer universal healthcare system run by the Canadian government.
She did. And was this for her son?
I can't do her voice. We used to hustle over the border for healthcare we received in Canada. And I think now, isn't that ironic?
Bimbo. You crazy wench.
She is something else.
She just remembered, though, because someone was going to find out and point that out. My golly, remember that time we went over to Canada and we had surgery?
Well, here's
aid for it.
Let's talk about I remember what I wanted to say. You know, all of these right wingers are all whacked out about how the healthcare system, this healthcare reform, is going to turn over all of our healthcare to the government, right? In fact,
that's
it looks like
some
tepid health reform bill is going to pass. But what percentage? You know, I know you hate when I do this because I just learned this myself.
I hate when you do this.
How about this? I'll just say it. Here's the percentage of healthcare that now is universal single payer healthcare. In other words, government run. 50%
in the United States.
Yeah, and a third
in the form of Medicare.
Medicare and Medicaid.
So 50% of the population
already
receiving it.
Yeah.
Okay.
One third of us get private health care insurance, and the rest, whatever, I can't do, let me see, half.
Wait a minute.
I can't add
SOL, the rest of us.
Yes, and then the SOLers, that makes up the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's a half and a third? How do you add that?
A half and a third. almost three quarters, a little over three quarters?
I don't know. So where's...
Mathematicians, we're not.
Also, where is our money going? And just some few random things. I don't know if you saw this, but Israel's prime minister expressed regret today over a crisis with the United States over plans to expand a Jewish neighborhood in East Jerusalem, even as American officials played down the apology and called for bold Israeli action to get peace efforts back on track. What happened when Biden was over there? Suddenly, the Israelis announced they were going to build 1,600 new homes for Israelis in East Jerusalem, which is what the Palestinians claim as their capital, and believe it, the Israelis have no intention of ever allowing a Palestinian state, and they're never going to have a capital, so they figure we might as well expand into it as much as possible.
And Hillary Clinton, I read something, she was slamming him pretty hard.
Curious. But Josh Rubner, who is the National Advocacy Director of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, that is, of the occupied territories, says official written U.S. policy based on the Fourth Geneva Convention deems Israel's colonization of Palestinian land as inconsistent with international law. The Obama administration should translate its promise into action to hold Israel accountable for its ongoing violations of international law and its defiance of repeated U.S. calls to freeze all colonization occupation of Palestinian land. Here's what it comes down to in terms of how it affects us. If, again, you're saying, and I appreciate it if you're saying, what is this guy going on about? Who cares about this stuff? Talk about something sexy. The most effective way, says Josh Rubiner of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation, is would be to end U.S. military aid to Israel amounting to $3 billion this year alone. That would be a real step towards a just and lasting peace between Palestinians and Israelis. So we are close to broke. Some people think that we're in a financial crisis where we're not going to get out of, whether you're on the right wing, whether you're on the left wing. We've got bad financial problems.
But the reality of it is, who has the cojones? Who will ever have the cojones to make that happen?
Well, I don't know. I mean, $3 billion.
I mean,
yeah.
The activists screaming now, and that's about it.
Yeah. So $3 billion a year go to the Israelis. Is there, if we took a plebiscite, in other words, people of the United States voted, should we send Israel $3 billion a year or not? What do you think the vote would be? About 85% no. Well, I mean, the same thing would be to everybody else that we're feeding at our trough, Egypt and Jordan, all those other countries over there. But here's something else. A tour of the United States arranged by the State Department to improve ties to Pakistani legislators ended in a public relations fiasco when members of the group refused to submit to extra airport screening in Washington, and they are now being hailed as heroes on their return home. They were over here, and they were at Ronald Reagan National Airport. Most of us will only refer to it as National. They wouldn't submit to being screened a second time, and so they were not allowed to get on that flight. Okay, that's in that article. The lawmakers were chosen to visit the United States by the political section of the American embassy. American officials are eager to reach out to political figures from the underdeveloped and isolated tribal areas where the Pakistani army is now fighting to reclaim territory from the Taliban. Yada, yada, yada. So what's in here? The United States Agency for International Development pledged 2 years ago to spend $750 million on various projects in the tribal areas. I mean, could we put this up to a vote? I mean, do you know about the Detroit schools? Do you know about the debt that Michigan has, California has, most states have? And we are doing development projects in Pakistan. Could we vote on that one? George Bush's law. George Bush's war. Investigators looking into corruption involving reconstruction projects in Iraq say they have opened more than 50 new cases in 6 months by scrutinizing large cash transactions. That's U.S. cash, folks. That's the money that you worked your butt off for, was taken from taxes, and the government under George W. Bush sent it over to Iraq, sometimes in these huge cargo planes with skids filled with $20 bills to hand out to people to buy them off.
A little bribery going on, yeah.
This, the Americans were involved, that they're being looked at in the nearly $150 billion program. How many of us would have voted for that? Some of the cases involve people who are suspected of having mailed tens of thousands of dollars to themselves from Iraq. These are Americans. Or of having stuffed the money into duffel bags and suitcases when leaving the country. In other cases, millions of dollars were moved through wire transfers. Suspects then used cash to buy BMWs, Hummers, and expensive jewelry, or to pay off enormous casino debts. So other suspects tried to conceal foreign bank accounts in Ghana, Switzerland, the Netherlands, and Britain. Do you realize this is an enormous racket?
Yeah.
And you know who the suckers are, dear friends? You and me. Yeah. Now, the guys that aren't just total 100% ripoff artists that don't belong in jail, those are the guys that have accrued these enormous, enormous sums of money. The multi-billionaires and just the plain old billionaires. This guy's only worth $1 or $2 billion. But that's not who we're talking about here. We're talking about a brand new number one. I mean, we can't even be number one in the richest guy in the world anymore.
No, we're not.
No. Bill Gates, you're out of here. Sorry to say. Because now Carlos Slim, looks like Slim, S-L-I-M, but he's from Mexico, and his money has swelled, his wealth has swelled to an estimated $53.5 billion.
He owns Telemundo, right?
He very well may, because he's...
Broadcasting.
Where, yeah, he does, yeah. In his giant mobile phone outfit, America Mobile.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but here's the kicker in all this. Many plutocrats That's pretty interesting. That's a word from 100 years ago. That's the rich. I don't know why, you know, from the, maybe someone Google it for us. Plutocrats back in the early part of the 20th century were the rich people that ruled. The golden rule, right? He who has the gold rules. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to grab into any of this, 313-298-WRIF. And let's see. Nick from Celine just called to say a half plus a third is 83%.
Thank you.
I knew somebody could do that.
Yeah. We need a calculator in here.
Warren Buffett, who's like number three, said, we've put a lot of money to work during the chaos of the last 2 years. When it's raining gold, reach for a bucket, not a thimble. Many plutocrats did just that. Indeed, last year's wealth wasteland has become a billionaire's bonanza. Most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year. You ready for this, folks? I mean, you know, these right-wing whack jobs are always talking about those leftists. They want a redistribution of wealth. There's this enormous redistribution of wealth going on. Enormous. And as usual, it's going from the bottom to the top. I mean, if you see a pyramid and there's this little teeny point on the top, the rest of us are in the, you know, the bottom part, the 95% of the rest of the pyramid, we're feeding it all upward. It's not like there's a lot of great wealth being created, because this is mostly all in speculative capital and what have you. But I'll read that again. Most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortune soar in the past year. So while we have been suffering all sorts of economic deprivation, you know, housing foreclosures, job loss, the kind of misery that we've seen among our friends, our family, our communities, our states are broke, our cities are broke, or broken. School systems closing and what have you. The richest, most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year.
Now, what's wrong with this picture?
What is wrong with this picture, indeed? This year, the world's billionaires have an average net worth of $3.5 billion, up $500 million in the last 12 months. The world has a little over 1,000 billionaires, up from 793 a year ago. Of those billionaires on last year's list, 88% of them saw their, or 88% saw their fortunes increase. And U.S. billionaires still dominate the ranks. So, folks,
Busy bitching about Obama spending money. You should be bitching about how Bush set these people up for greatness and for us to fall.
The U.S. commands 38% of the collective $3.6 trillion net worth of the world's richest, down from 44% a year ago. So we're losing. We're not even number one. I guess we're still number one. But so, yeah, we haven't been able to say that in a long time. Number one.
We've gotten
the billionaires. So there is something dreadfully wrong. So I don't understand why these right-wingers, why if they oppose income redistribution, why they don't defend themselves? Because, you know, some of them, they're ultimately financed by the ultra-wealthy. I mean, they're just stooges, tools, operatives for the ultra-rich. And you know, they don't know. They got, like, all these different, what would you call it, rationales and, you know, talk about the Constitution and all that. But essentially, they're carrying water for the rich people. You know,
yes.
Thank you, sir. You know, I mean, and some of them are real tough, but
may I have just, another?
Yeah, you know. Actually, I can't say what I was going to say.
Peter, did you see that look on my face a minute ago when I was reading an email?
Yeah.
We were solicited to send Bibles. They think we have Bibles.
What do you mean?
To this missionary group. They're requesting help.
Wow.
Where did they get calltalkyes@yahoo.com?
Yeah. Some of them, this guy's not, doesn't really figure that much in it all. Simon Cowell, ex of, what's that show?
No, he's still on American Idol.
Is he? I never saw that.
This is his final season.
I saw him once in a while. I turn and I go, what is this? The Amateur Hour. How do people find that interesting?
Well, it's a very popular show.
I know. I don't get it, though. Anyway, so he and about 250 other Richies have this Bugatti Veyron.
Which is a car.
A car, yeah.
A $1 million car.
It has top speed, 253 miles an hour, and Let's see. A lot of people, Ralph Lauren, Tom Cruise, Jay Leno has one as well.
Well, Jay Leno has one of everything.
Does he?
He has warehouses full of cars. Collects them.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I don't know. That would, so, you know, here, look at, just so people don't think I'm a total commie, let these rich people have enough to get a car like that. I mean, you could go the other way. You could go, you know, totally socialist or totally commie or something like that, and then they wouldn't have it. But right now, I don't think anybody's into that. So, you know, people could make $5 or $6 million a year, and they could buy cars like this. What the hell, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they could have their big houses and all that. But why you have 1,000 people with, trillions is just no sense whatsoever. And it's just parked somewhere. It's not doing anything, other than fueling the speculation bubbles that essentially ruins the economy for us, for the ordinary person, for the middle class person, the working person. And it enriches. So, this is what we've learned. That, one more time for that sentence. Most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year. So what's wrong here? Where are the righties when they're going to oppose income redistribution of that note? Now, here is Casey B. Mulligan. He's an economics professor at the University of Chicago, and he asked in the New York Times, did the minimum wage increase destroy jobs? And he says, yes, it did. That it actually destroyed the potential for 500,000 jobs. That we could have had another 500,000 jobs if it wasn't for this damn liberal minimum wage increase. You remember what the increase was on July 24th, 2009?
It wasn't much.
No, it was 70 cents.
Yeah.
Went from $6.55 to $7.25.
Can imagine. This guy is so greedy.
Well, this, too, is what I always call capitalist blackmail. Because what they're essentially saying is that if we want anything like a decent wage for the hours of our life that we put in, we've got to work for peasant wages. And in fact, given this logic, if it was $6.55, why not scale it back? Why are we going up? Let's go down. I mean, it's a race to the bottom, isn't it? And just as we race to the bottom, most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the last year. And so most of us view 500,000 job losses, says the good professor, as a lot, because they would, for example, make a sizable dent in the jobs that the White House claimed last year. So it's these damn liberals.
Yeah. And so everyone who's saying, you know, this is affecting everyone, even the very rich people are hurting. Well,
I can't say that, can I?
They're what?
I don't say. Want the job.
They're fooling themselves.
Want the job.
Fooling themselves.
Yeah, there you go. But if you think about this, by the way, $6.55 minimum wage to $7.25 an hour is income redistribution. Because what that means, if you're making $5, well, that's below minimum. If you're making $10 an hour and you say to your employer, I want $10.50 an hour, and he or she says, okay, or if you have a union and they boost it up, that means more for you, less for the owners. Mm-hmm. So that's income redistribution. Income is being redistributed all the time. So down here in the real world where 500,000 people live, 70 cents is a deal so that 500,000 people don't get hired. This is capitalist blackmail. At the top, most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Get your St. Patty's Day rocking with 101 WRIF. This Wednesday, join Meltdown live on location from 3 till 7 with Riff Rock Girl Sarah at Rosie O'Grady's in Chesterfield Township. Grab your limited edition WRIF St. Patty's Day t-shirts, stickers, beads, and giveaways. That's this Wednesday with 101 The Riff at Rosie O'Grady's in Chesterfield Township. It's your chance to celebrate the look of the Irish and make your St. Patrick's Day rock with 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Emmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Emmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Verizon is the best destination for incredible deals on exceptional 3G smartphones. And right now, they're going one better with buy one, get one free offers on their smartest 3G smartphones. You heard it. Just choose a 3G smartphone like the touchscreen BlackBerry Storm 2 or the versatile BlackBerry Curve 8530 and get another one free. You can even buy the app-hungry feature-packed Motorola Droid for only $199.99 and get a second one free, both after $100 mail-in rebate debit card per phone. So many amazing smartphones. One incredible deal. Buy one, get one. Keep one, give one. Get the 3G smartphone you want on America's largest and most reliable 3G network. Visit Verizon Wireless, verizonwireless.com, or call 1-800 to join in. Free phone of equal or lesser value. All phones require new two-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Detroit's Rock Station. 101. The Riff.
101.1 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt? Sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? Having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second segment. We're talking about, we should have played our little Eat the Rich, because they're eating us. I don't know if you're just joining us. Talking about this report, how most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year. Billionaires got richer and richer. And while many of us are having some bad times, and I want to get to your calls at 313-298-WRIF, but I had a little feature here just before I get your calls.
Another one bites the dust.
Okay, Republican State Senator Roy Ashburn in in California, said Monday he is gay, ending days of speculation that began after his arrest outside of a gay bar. That's always...
Is he married?
Always, yeah, he's married. Oh, poor kids. Always, and guess how he voted on gay rights measures during his 14... Against them all, yeah. I am gay. Those are words that have been so difficult for me for so long.
You know, Michael Moore was on Joy Behar's show recently, within the last week, and he brought up that documentary, which I've got to see. It's called Outrage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, and apparently it's all about the Republican closeted gay men, which is so sad. They should just be okay with being themselves.
Well, they're not all okay. I mean, they're not all gay.
What? It's okay to be gay.
It is okay to be gay, but they're not all gay. This is another guy that's out of here in Salt Lake City. A late-night confession by Utah's House Majority Leader about sitting nude in a hot tub with a minor 25 years ago has shocked this conservative
minor
state.
Minor female.
Yeah, minor female. Yeah, 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 yeah. So this is a little better
for
him.
So she was 15 years old, and he was 28 years old, and they had a little skinny dip.
He said, we did not have any sexual contact. Yeah, I didn't inhale.
Right.
I did not have sex with that woman.
We've heard that before.
Yeah, he said it was inappropriate. And she says, they of course, wanted to know that she said she was not taking any phone calls. And questions about whether there was any sexual contact were inappropriate. She wrote in a text message, I will not go into detail.
Who said it was? Oh, he said it was his fault.
Yeah, so
she's the one that's been making waves.
Yeah. Why? Well, she got $140,000 from him, tried to pay her $150,000.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Now, there are, you know, some Democrats are out of there, too, in scandal. Charles Rangel, Democrat from New York.
Yeah.
This was financial scandal, and that's kind of boilerplate stuff. But, you know, the deal with the Republicans, the conservatives are, is they're so damn self-righteous. Mm-hmm. So, and they're such hypocrites. So when they get caught, it's a little, it's kind of special. Okay.
It feels so warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah, it does. I love it when it happens. So here we have this obscene spectacle of this country going deeper and deeper into debt, things that we need to make our life and our community whole, evaporating, schools closing, roads going bad, programs for the poor, the elderly, the sick and all that, hospitals being shut down, all of that, and most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year. Can we get anybody to defend the rich? Anybody who's carrying water for the rich people?
They made that money, Peter, and they're employing us.
That's it. All right, let's go to our phone, 313-298-WRIF.
Yes, right. Got it right.
Sorry, almost said a wrong one.
Well, you've worked at a lot of radio stations.
Yes, I have. Here's Todd Nikors. Todd, hi, it's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us on WRIF.
Hi, how you doing?
We're good.
I'm trying to figure out what your topic is tonight.
Well, this is, it's all over the place, as is every week. What is your topic?
I don't know. I'm not doing meth, so I don't know if I can keep up with you guys. well, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I could agree because I grew up pretty poor, and, I busted my butt, put myself through college.
So now you're rich.
No, not rich, but I'm doing all right.
Good. Good for you.
So you don't want to pay for everyone else's stuff.
No, I'm a little pissed about that.
how did I guess this, Peter?
Yeah, well, I work my butt off. You do it the right way, and I move back. As you could tell, my call was from E-Course. Now, you got a lot of people hating because I did it the right way.
Hey, but you know what? A lot of people who aren't doing so well work their butts off probably harder than you do with three different jobs.
Or as hard. But wait a minute.
Or as hard. See, Peter's nicer than me.
Nobody, Todd, nobody's talking about taking any money from you. In fact, I was saying, look, you could have incomes $5, $6, $7 million, but as long as we have such, financial catastrophes in this country, why do we have people that are sitting on fortunes of like $50 billion? I mean, Bill Gates is a pretty generous guy, but why doesn't he write a check like for $52 billion? That would only leave him with $3 billion, right?
Right. Well, I can see your point there, but what is capitalism based on? It's based on
looting. It's based on looting.
Well, I think you're a little overboard there. I'm not a lib. I'm not a right winger for sure. I'm kind of in the middle somewhere, and I just, you know, I'm looking at a lot of abuse on the financial, you know, the welfare systems, the things that are designed to help the poor.
Well, where are you seeing
Wait
this abuse? Where,
these people need it more than ever.
Where do you see the abuse?
I see abuse as far as, like, bridge cards being used by healthy, able-bodied men that can get work, but...
How
can so many white guys from the suburbs see people using bridge cards?
Are you down in the inner city a lot?
I live in Ecorse, which could pretty much qualify.
Yeah, it is. There's poor sections of. Let me just tell you this: for every percent,
you saw someone buy M&Ms.
Yeah, or cigarettes. Yeah, listen.
But you can't buy cigarettes.
There is fraud and people taking advantage of every single system, private and public, on the earth.
Up to the very, very wealthy.
Up to the very, very
Madoff
wealthy.
Lately?
So on one hand, you may have that small percentage of people that are scamming what you're calling the welfare system, which barely even exists anymore.
Right.
Which doesn't amount to a whole lot.
Food. What about these starving children?
It shouldn't go on. It shouldn't go on. People should be, you know, use the bridge cards and whatever. People are listening in other states. It's like you get food for it and all that. But the real misuse of this system, the thing that really is taking your taxes and taking my taxes, is at the top of the system. It's the Halliburtons. It's these huge corporations that pay next to no tax. It's these multimillionaire and billionaires who pay, you know, such a small percentage of their tax schedule and all that. Leave the poor people alone. Okay. Thank you very much. And, everybody should follow the law. But it's, where are you looking at for abuse? Are you looking at the people that are scamming like $40? Or are you looking at people that are scamming $40 billion?
Seriously, people who, like families of four, I don't know, they're getting a couple $100 a month. That is just so... such a non-issue.
And usually, I've lost track, but I don't know. I mean, able-bodied men do not get bridge cards, as far as I know.
Or maybe they do.
Oh, no, that's for food stamps, right? Or is it?
Same thing.
Bridge card. Okay.
But what about able-bodied men who can't find work? What are they? Oh, well, you know what? Too bad for them. Let their kids starve. And you know what? The way it is, the money they get, the kids don't even get fresh food anyway. They eat canned, processed, horrible food, but at least they're alive.
Yeah. Here's Darren in Monroe, the home of George Custer and Fermi 2 and 1. Go ahead, Darren, you're on the air.
And maybe 3.
Yeah.
Hey, Peter, how are you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, some of the things you say do resonate, but, you know, it's like, where do you draw the line? Where does it stop? When do you stop letting a third party determine what is reasonable and what is unreasonable? And you're kind of engaging in a little bit hyperbole that capitalism is thievery and everything, and it's really
looting.
Not. It's what made this country great, and I just... The things you're saying sound great, but where does it stop? Who has the power? Who has the say-so? Who moderates? When is enough is enough? So, you know, it starts off meaning well, but then it degenerates into, well, then we start celebrating mediocrity because, well, the elites, whatever they be, business people or athletes, who says it is enough? Our Olympic athletes won 10 gold medals, one guy. Well, now you're greedy, and we're after two. You're no longer allowed to compete. You got to sit down and watch.
So it's okay that these billionaires have increased their fortune while your neighbors in Monroe have suffered foreclosures and job loss.
Well, okay. Now, see, you're at extreme ends of the spectrum. Now, if these elites have broken laws, if we're talking robber barons that are doing, destroying the environment, take some serious.
They're doing all that. They're doing all that. Listen,
well, okay.
you live within a sight line of Fermi 1 and 2 that cut so many corners you're under a shadow all the time.
So am I, of course. When Fermi came in, they put a lot of money out into the economy. They built school in you know, they paid for this large, lavish high school, and then when they pulled out, stopped donating money, you know, now this school is pretty much empty. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but it's such a scary, you know, slippery slope. But who gets to determine when enough is enough?
Well, that's a good question. Let me ask you one thing. Are you going to defend George Custer?
No, absolutely. I am not. I'm really surprised. I always tell people it's amazing that Monroe does not have a larger Native American population, because that statue would have come down a long time ago.
I know. There's a big statue in downtown Monroe.
No,
wait. Here, you can come to certain social consensus, and everybody's not going to agree with it. Because, look, you mentioned are the ultra-wealthy doing things illegal? Well, we know that a lot of them are, and all you got to do is read the business section of the New York Times every day, and it's amazing. It's like a crime sheet, how many people are being indicted for breaking U.S. laws having to do with financial transactions. And those are the ones, of course, that are caught. But you also mentioned the phrase robber barons, which described the people during the 19th century who amassed these enormous fortunes under the shadiest of business practices. People were living in the worst conditions. Workers had no rights whatsoever. They worked 12 and 14 hour days. There was no safety regulations. If they tried to strike, they got the rich people got the National Guard to shoot them down, on and on and on and on. Well, we're returning. I mean, nobody's shooting us down because we're not even trying to unionize or trying to do anything. We're just sitting there saying, oh, drat, this is terrible. We're not even offering any resistance here. We're simply talking, and they'll let us talk forever, you know? I mean, I got commercials on this show. We're making money while we're talking how bad this all is, right?
But where does it stop? Because you make more money than I do, and then, the spectrum turns, and now the lowest 5% determines that the highest 10 or 15% income level. Well, you're making too much.
Well, that's not what happened. I mean, what happened? They began this era of reform called the Progressive Era, and they started to have all these laws. They had laws that limited how many hours people could work, that they abolished child labor. They had all these safety standards. They had, a Meats Inspection Act. They had the Food and Drug Administration. All these things like this. Then in the 1930s, so they hoped that the troops and the cops would shoot down less number of workers who were trying to unionize. They had they made a federal law saying that people had the right to unionize. They had Social Security, on and on. So that is a social consensus that said that just because people can accrue these enormous fortunes, that they've been able to get to the top of the market pyramid, and the vast majority of us can't and don't and never will. The vast majority of us never, ever, ever will. So what there was a decision at one point, and that's gone all to hell now, is that there ought to be some moderation on what kind of wealth people can accumulate, because among other things, two things. One, that if somebody has a lot, that means by definition other people have a little. And we've got the highest number of poor people of any industrialized country in the world, in what is still the wealthiest country in the world. We're the only country without a national health care system, and what happens is that the wealthy control the political system with their money. And the more money they have, the more politicians they can buy, the more lobbyists they can field. And so it turns out to be, all those countries that we hate, where we say, it's a dictatorship, it's controlled by an unelected elite. Hello, that's what we got as well. All right, thank you very much, Darren. I appreciate the conversation. Let's see. I'm sorry. I thought I was blabbing so much. I thought you were raising your hand.
No.
Okay, you won't do
it. Peter, you know better than that.
I do. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan is who you're listening to. And you, if you'd like to get on the air, at 313-298-WRIF. Here is Joe in Taylor. Joe, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Jalene. How are you doing?
Hi. Great.
Hey,
thanks.
I want to, before I go on too far, I can't say I'm exactly left-wing. I'm not exactly right-wing. I kind of fall somewhere down in the middle. I'm not exactly the smoothest talker, but like back when I was kind of far left, you know, I would sit there and listen to Rush Limbaugh and just shake my head and say, oh, man, I could debate him all day. And now listen to you guys, I sit there and think to myself, I could debate you all day. Now, what if I challenge you to a possible debate with somebody that I listen to frequently? Would you be up to it?
We already, let me guess. He's a religious talk show host.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Here in Detroit.
Yes, he is.
Right. Yeah. Well, we've had this challenge before. Peter has no interest.
Turn him off.
As his agent.
Turn him off, man. Jeez. You know, I thought about doing it for a bit. I mean, we were going to do anything from Does God Exist? I thought I would really have him on that because that's a pretty tough one to prove.
That's
right?
Tough.
Yeah, but, you know, in any rational terms. But I figured, what in the world is in it for me? You know, I mean, in other words, this guy is pretty obscure, not that I'm, you know, particularly well known or anything like that, but I would be doing him this immense favor. And you may notice that very frequently, I don't even mention the name of right-wing talk show hosts.
True.
There's a guy like now is the most controversial guy of all, the guy with the chalkboard. I won't even say his name.
Yeah.
You know, screw him.
The whiner.
The whiner, the crier. I mean, why the nutball? Yeah. Why would I even give him any free publicity? Why should I give this guy any free publicity?
Well, actually, I as far as I know, he's nationwide. He's local, but he's also got nationwide.
Well, good. Then he doesn't need
but
me.
But even more, who cares? Why should we care?
You know what? Tell him to contact the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yes. He needs to debate Dan Barker, ffrf.org. There you go.
Yeah, this guy comes out and, you know, he this guy used to be a minister, and now he's head of this atheist group.
It's mainly a group. His biggest push is separation of church and state.
Yeah, none of us care that people believe in God or go to church or mosque.
Go to your church, do your thing. Don't shove it down my throat because it's not going to work. I will not drink your Kool-Aid.
Okay, thank you very much. appreciate it. I hope that still makes sense to people. Maybe
Kool-Aid?
That's what stopped him. But that was when was the guy? That was like over 30 years ago.
Oh,
yeah, that was at Jonestown.
Jim Jones, yeah.
Jim Jones.
I had people drink
this poison Kool-Aid.
I just saw a whole, Jim Jones' son was on the Oprah show. So.
Yeah, yeah.
He just happened to not be there the day of the mass Kool-Aid drinking.
I'm just astounded about all these people just defending the rich.
I think well trained.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's talk a little more. I just got a couple things right before I break about the economy. China says, remember I was talking about our military budget. China's official military budget will rise just 7.5% in 2010, according to a government spokesman, a rate that is about half the official increase in recent years. In other words, they're actually doing less, and the first to fall below 10% since 1989. So they're not spending very much any longer on military. The announcement by Li Shuang, I'm going to try, a spokesman for the National People's Congress, China's legislature, gave no explanation for the slowdown. I have one, though. Some analysts speculated, however, that China's huge economic stimulus program and other efforts to address unemployment and welfare had eaten into money that in a normal year would go towards defense. I mean, the defense, really, towards war. It's not really defense.
Right.
When they set up the Constitution,
it's really more like the attack.
Yeah. I mean, we used to call it the Department of War.
Yeah.
There wasn't a Department of Defense. It was the Department of War, and I think that was like into World War II. Someone can check that for me. It's also possible that China reduced the growth of its publicly acknowledged defense spending to help allay international concerns about its rising power. Okay, you know, we're going to be this big economic power, and we have this enormous military. We're going to scare you, so we're not going to do that. That's nice of them. 2009 Pentagon report estimated China's total military spending to be between $105 billion and $150 billion. While growing rapidly, China's military spending is dwarfed by that of the United States, which is about $719 billion in outlays this year for national defense.
Mm.
There's another $300 billion that is disguised in other parts of the U.S. budget. So it's about $1 trillion a year. So we're outspending them 10-1 or so. American military spending amounts to 4% of the nation's gross domestic product, compared with 1.4. Let's see, that the United States accounted for 48% of the entire world's military spending. So, okay. So what's going on here? I figure that what they're going to do is they're going to let us go almost broke on war spending. Yeah. But not too broke, because they want us to still have to need to borrow, have a need to borrow from them.
Sure.
Because they have enormous cash reserves from us. And in fact, China, the world's biggest holder of foreign exchange reserve, renewed its commitments to U.S. Treasury bonds, the market for them, and said it would, but it said it's wary of substantially boosting its gold holdings. Some of you that are interested in getting gold, be aware that they think that gold's not the best investment. And according to...
Unless you're desperate and you need to go to the pawn shop.
Yeah.
You know, hey.
Yi Gong says the U.S. Treasury market is the world's largest government bond market. Our foreign exchange reserves are huge. So you can imagine the U.S. Treasury market is an important one to us. Yeah, because they're loaning us money and we're paying them back. And I use the pronoun correctly. We are paying that off. Where the debt service comes out of the money that you and I make and pay in taxes. And instead of going to keep schools open that are being closed, instead of keeping hospitals open that are being closed, it's going to service the debt for the loans that that we owe to China and the military budget as well. So it's a sweet little racket, isn't it?
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you see chalky water spots on your dishes and tub that drive you crazy? Those spots are a warning that your plumbing may have a serious limescale buildup. What you can't see is limescale clogging your pipes, breaking down your appliances, and blocking their heating elements. And that could be costing you $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove hard water limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare. Just visit bestofwater.com. HydraCare has been sold for years by the major utility in England as the ideal treatment to reduce and prevent limescale. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. Guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestofwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestofwater.com. That's bestofwater.com.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-493-8159. Now you have qualified help in dealing with the IRS. This is the second chance you never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. Call right now for your second chance. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
We inherited this business from our father.
Who got it from his father?
We needed an emergency preparedness plan in case of fire, cyber attack.
Or anything.
So we went to Ready.gov and got free checklists, templates, and more to be prepared. Thanks to Ready.gov, we worry less about keeping Rizzo and Sons in business.
Only it should be Rizzo and grandsons.
And granddaughter.
Right.
Go to Ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
You must be your fairy godmother.
Yes. It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Pop it, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream. A wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You've got to help us. Mole Man has fired his darkening missile towards the sun. It'll put the world in shadow.
Don't worry. Too late to catch the missile. I'll just fly quickly around the Earth in reverse time.
The Red Defender begins to circle the Earth faster and faster until its momentum literally changes Earth's rotation on its axis.
I'm back, citizens. No need to thank me. Strange. It's dark in the middle of the afternoon. And where is everyone? You, old man, with a flashlight.
I was young just a minute ago.
I must have gone the wrong way and sped up time. Whoops. Sorry about that.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our second hour at 1 a.m. I'm going to have a guest on, talk about human-caused climate change and sort of dispense with all the idiotic challenges to. Why is it all coming from the right wing, Jolene? I don't understand this. But here, I want to go back. I want to continue. People are still bound and determined to defend the ultra-wealthy's increasing concentration of wealth. And I want to tell you, they appreciate it. I mean, they barely know you exist, couldn't care less about you, but the fact that you're defending their right to remain ultra-wealthy is well appreciated. And also, from this article from Forbes about the world's billionaires 2010, where they say most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortune soar in the past year, and you're defending that process. They are really appreciative, because what they would really fear, I mean, why is all these downriver people? I don't understand that. I mean, that's a pretty much a working class area. And, you know, they're always afraid. I mean, you know, the wealthy have always been afraid of the working class. Mm-hmm. All, you know, they're going to make a revolution. And they don't have to worry about you guys. And let me tell you, they really appreciate it. I mean, it's hard for me to speak for them because I'm not one of them. But I just know, you know, I mean, they don't have to worry like they did in other eras, like the 60s, 1960s, mm-hmm. 1930s, the first part of the 20th century, the 1880s. They're always worried about the working class becoming revolutionary and upending their right to have most of the wealth of the world and to call all the shots and to, you know, live a life of luxury. Sure. While other people just lived in misery. And now they don't have to worry about it, so I'm sure they appreciate it. But let me just intrude with one other thing before we get back to our phones. A federal appeals court in San Francisco has upheld the use of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance and in God we trust on U.S. currency, and they rejected the arguments the phrases violated the separation of church and state. Remember, in the First Amendment to the Constitution, it says Congress shall make no law establishing a religion. And that's the first right. Nothing about freedom of speech or press or assembly or anything like that. The Founding Fathers were so concerned about the horrid effect of official religions on the political state, that was the first thing that they said can't do. So I don't even understand. Why do we have "In God We Trust" on our money? Whatever.
I don't know.
I don't get it at all. But the use of the words "under God" in the pledge, now that's really something. Judge Carlos Bea wrote for this majority, "The pledge is constitutional. The Pledge of Allegiance serves to unite our vast nation through the proud recitation of some of the ideals upon which our republic was founded." Well, "under God" was certainly not one of them, so I don't get that. But the man who brought the suit on, actually he was aided by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, our pals, and his name is in here somewhere. All I see is his last name. But, Michael Newdow. And he said, "I want to be treated equally." And he says, supporters of the phrase, in other words, having "under God" and "in God we trust," those people want to have their religious views espoused by the government. I mean, hello? I mean, I don't even get it. What does it mean, one nation under God?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even get what in the world that means. Reached on his cell phone, Newdow said he hadn't even been aware that the appeals court had ruled against him Thursday. And he said, like the great Lebowski, isn't that?
The Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski, yeah. Oh, man, what a bummer. I guess. But here, the Pledge of Allegiance. I'll tie it into this. Rick from East Point writes, they're talking about the guy they wanted me to debate.
To debate.
He says he's a dumbass who thinks the world is only 6,000 years old. Now, here's the real question for you. Is the goal of progressives, he puts in quote, to move America towards a more Marxist system of government? And he says, could you please comment on my question? Well, the very fact that he puts forth that question with progressives. Now, that whack job right-wing television host with the blackboard, mm-hmm. That's his new thing, progressives. That's who are
the cancer that needs to be cut out.
Yeah, right.
What he said.
And also, he says, don't trust anybody that talks about economic or social justice, too.
Or peace.
Or peace or anything like that. Well, I hate to tell, I don't think Rick will mind, but I would hate to tell the whack job on television that the whole Pledge of Allegiance was put together by a Baptist minister who was a Christian socialist.
Yeah, back in, was it the 30s?
Oh, no, way back, 1892.
Oh, okay. But there was something that happened in the...
In 1954, that the pledge had inserted into it "under God."
Thank you.
So for the first over half century, it just said, "I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, which stands one nation, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all." But so, to distinguish ourselves from the godless communists, one of these far right wing Republicans said, "We got to put 'under God' under there." I mean, one doesn't even know.
It was
one,
Knights of Columbus guy.
These Catholics, which we'll talk about in a minute, even though some of my dear friends are Catholic, and they are in the peace and social justice movement, and they are progressives as well. But, so you had a Baptist minister that wrote the Pledge of Allegiance. He knew the words, the English words, "under God." He did not put it in there because what he wanted was a political statement, because he pledged allegiance to the flag and the republic, but what the main thing it was for which it stands, one nation, indivisible. So what, when little kids say this, one nation, invisible, indivisible, which means it cannot be divided, which was a comment on the Civil War, that it had that the Union had no capacity to dissolve. But then the key phrase in this is "with liberty and justice for all." And he wanted to put equality in there, but he knew in this era of segregation, where all the gains of the free slaves had been beaten back by white terror in the South, the Ku Klux Klan and other Knight Riders, and lynchings and mass murders in that period after the federal government left the South in the 1880s. So in the 10 or 12 years that black people were had all of their rights removed,
right,
and through, as I say, through terrorism. But he said, liberty and justice for all. That was the key phrase in it, liberty and justice for all. So the under God thing, I mean, I just don't even get it. But one of the things that I keep wondering is, why are religious people so violent? I mean,
oh,
we just think of, you know, now Muslim terrorists, but this Elton John thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Where is that? Elton John. Oh, I have it right here. Elton John. We talked about this before, didn't we?
No.
Elton John had said something about Jesus was gay.
Yeah.
He really upset this crazy guy named Neil Horsley, who has now been arrested as of a couple of days ago because he was making, as they're calling them, terrorist threats against Elton John, and held up a sign in front of Elton John's Atlanta apartment or condo saying, Elton John must die. And this guy is an anti-abortion nut.
Oh, what a surprise.
I know.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, too, so we want to put under God. I'm not sure I want to be associated with these people. Child abuse claims sweep Catholic Church in Europe. I don't know if you've seen that. And they're even claiming that when Pope Benedict the 16th, the current pope, was the archbishop in this German city, that he, like so many other archbishops, just looked the other way while these priests were diddling these young boys, too. And, I mean, it's in the thousands, too. That which is so absolutely incredible. Vatican now says the campaign is part of a campaign against the Pope. Well, I don't know whether it is or it isn't, but the Vatican has received about 3,000 accusations of abuse by priests of minors in the past decade.
Repress much?
Yeah. The Vatican has a chief exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth. He says the devil is in the Vatican. Now, this is not me. I don't believe in the devil no more than I don't believe in any gods. But sex abuse scandals in the Roman Catholic Church are proof that, quote, the devil is at work inside the Vatican, according to the Holy See's chief exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth, who's been the Vatican's chief exorcist for 25 years and said he's dealt with 70,000 cases of demonic possession, said the consequences of satanic infiltration included power struggles at the Vatican, as well as, quote, cardinals who do not believe in Jesus and bishops who are linked to the demon.
My God. Gosh.
I mean, are we talking about the Da Vinci Code here?
Really?
What? I mean,
crazy.
What century is this?
Sometimes I wonder.
When one speaks of the smoke of Satan, he says, in the holy rooms, it is all true, including these latest stories of violence and pedophilia. He claimed that another example of satanic behavior was the Vatican cover-up over the deaths in 1998 of the then-commander of the Swiss Guard, his wife, and a corporal, a Swiss Guard, who were all found shot dead. He says they covered up everything. Here, one sees the rot.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the chief exorcist. And there have been unconfirmed reports of homosexual background to the tragedy and the involvement of a fourth person who was never named. I mean, isn't it a little hard to be religious these days?
Yes, a little too hard. I can't fathom it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take some more calls here. Here's Chad in Wyandotte. Chad.
Hey, how's it going, Peter? And I didn't catch your name.
Jolene,
nice to meet you.
You too.
Okay. So I'm just trying to make sure everything's clear here.
I already see where he's going with this, but go ahead.
Okay, so, well, because you know what I said to the call screener, so do you guys want everybody to be paid the same?
Why do you even ask
that? No.
Wait a minute. Well, why do you even ask that?
Because it seems like, because the way I feel is that people that, and I'm not saying everyone, but a large percentage of people that have amassed large fortunes has done it because they've, one, taken the chances to business chances to make that money. They've put research into learning how to make that money, and all that kind of things. And,
well, I hear you. And again, I mean, I said before you got on the air how the wealthy appreciate your defense of them, and you are Wyandotte. You're downriver. So it all makes sense. Well, here. First off, if you were listening earlier, which I don't expect everyone to listen to every second of it, I said people could easily have, you know, by federal law, have their incomes limited to $5 or $6 million through the tax code. That would amply reward any sort of innovativeness, you know, whatever, all of what it takes perhaps to amass a fortune. Of course, a lot of the fortunes that people have not amassed through any kind of business acumen, but rather have just inherited. Some of the most awful wealthy people in this country simply got it from their daddies, like the Waltons, for instance, who never did a damn day's work in their lives and are like the 20th richest guy in the country. Is one of the Waltons worth $18 billion. Now, if he was only worth, say the government confiscated $17.5 billion of his fortune and used it to restore schools that had been closed in Kansas City and Rhode Island, that helped the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, the state of California, and what have you, and left him with a paltry half a billion dollars a year. Well, he still could operate in the same way. He could live the same kind of life with just, you know, whatever he wanted, he could consume $1 million cars. He could buy islands. He could buy politicians. He could do whatever he want. There's no reason in the world, except that we live in an absolute insane society, that allows that amount of money to accrue to such a small number of people when so many people in this country and around the world are doing so horribly. What would be wrong with taking $17.5 billion from a guy who never earned it and never had any of the qualities that you opened your statement with?
The thing that I'd have to say there is that how are you going to take it away from somebody that their parents earned it and not take it away from somebody that earned it themselves?
Well, you simply have a tax code that has over $6 million. I mean, this is the way it was under the Eisenhower administration, the Republican, you know, in the 1950s. If you made over the equivalent of like $6 million, 90% of everything over that was taxed at a 90% rate. And you know what? Like I said, the wealthy people lived a wealthy life. They had everything they wanted. They had their exclusive clubs. They ran the country. They ran the industries. They bought who and what they wanted. The only thing I'm talking about is that this is pathological greed for anybody to want to amass a fortune like that when other people are being told if they get, I forgot what the figure was, instead of $6.55 an hour, they get $7.25 an hour. They're going to limit the capacity of people to have jobs. I mean, come on. This is peasantry. This is like the Middle Ages. This isn't even like the 19th century.
The only thing that I'd say there is I believe that people are not paid for an hour of work. They're paid for what kind of value they bring to the market.
Well, who would you rather have in the world? Your janitor at wherever you work or go to school, or this Walton guy, somewhere or other, I got his first name, that never worked a damn day in his life and is worth $18 billion. I'd rather, give him his half billion, take the $17.5 billion, and, the other thing we could do, here for the economy, if people were limited in wealth accumulation to, say, $500 million, which is, I mean, such an extraordinary, I mean, that's like 0.1% of the American population. So 99.9% of the people wouldn't even be affected by that. But it essentially could mean that the tax structure could be that you or your parents or I don't know how old you are or whatever could maybe have a $50,000 tax deduction. That would then put more money into the economy. The ordinary person, the ordinary middle-class person that works their butt off and doesn't get enough, doesn't get paid enough and doesn't get enough for their taxes, could go out and do what every American should do. Spend! Consume! All right. Thank you very much. God, this is getting tiring, man. God. Who else wants to defend the rich? Here's Joe from Ann Arbor. Joe, hi. You're on the air. Hey, Joe. Hey, that's a song, isn't it? Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
What's the rest of that? What's on?
Hello?
Where are you going with your...
Gun in your hand.
Yeah. Go. Yeah, that's right. What's up, man?
Joe Graveheart?
Yeah, Joe.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Joe.
I called in while you were talking about Indians and casinos.
Yeah, go ahead. But we weren't. Yeah, but go ahead. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in Oglala Lakota from South Dakota. Some of the tribes in Michigan do have money, but the tribal councils.
You with me? You're not with me. Okay. Well,
that was a bad connection, I think. We're sorry about that.
Yeah. I didn't get it. All right. Let's see here. Here's John in Ypsilanti. John, you're not officially downriver, are you?
No, I believe, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm north of downriver. My dad lives in Flat Rock. That's downriver.
There you go.
I would consider myself sort of right-wing, and I would like to defend the little guy. I do barn restoration construction, and I, you know, barely made 30-some thousand last year.
So how in the world can you be right-wing? Right-wing means supporting the ultra-wealthy.
Okay, maybe not right-wing. That was a little... I'm conservative. I grew up in a Christian home. And
okay, so you're conservative about things like the sanctity of marriage or what?
Yes, stuff like that, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, all I wanted to propose...
Well, you mean so you don't think gay people should get married?
Well, isn't that... Aren't gays sanctified when they get married?
I know, using their words,
Sorry,
Peter.
Go ahead.
Yes, that is my personal opinion. I don't believe in gay marriage, no. But I don't go around preaching and...
Well, good. Marry a woman.
Condemning people that, you know, they're living a wrong lifestyle or whatever, but...
Whatever.
Anyways, I just wanted to say, my personal opinion is I think that... a flat tax, you know, 10-15% across the board, would eliminate a lot of the crap and political games, money games that Congress plays, and it would eliminate a lot of the rich, you know, from accumulating so much wealth.
Why would it? I mean, if you were making like some of this, like this Disney guy makes $105 million a year or more, I mean,
yeah.
10 or 15%, he wouldn't care.
Go back into the community.
Well, wait a minute. But if he's paying only 10 or 15% and you're paying 10 or 15%, how about my system, John, where you at $30,000 would pay zero tax and the guy that's making $105 million would pay after he makes $5 million or $6 million, 90%, meaning that you would not have to pay any. That seems to be a lot fairer.
Yeah, but my thing is, I don't know how you'd implement this, but...
It's called tax code.
Well, I'm just saying, I don't think they should be making... It, greed is the bottom line. You know, people like that, they shouldn't be taking that much money. I mean, what's the point? When you die, you can't take it with you, you know? I mean, it all stays here, and what's the point of amassing that kind of wealth when there's other people around you that are suffering, like you were saying earlier, you know? I mean, there's no point in it to me.
Well, you know what it is? I think the point is that, for one thing, you can do it, and it almost must be like something like a contest. Like, for instance, contrary, you know, everybody thinks everybody on the air is like making an enormous fortune. If I suddenly started making the money that some of these high-paid right-wing millionaire talk show hosts make, I mean, I would probably upgrade my living circumstances some, but not a great amount.
You might do some fixer-upper stuff.
You know, well, I would maybe even do a little more than a little fixer-upper stuff.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, if I started making over, I never even really thought about it. If I started making over, say, $250,000-$300,000 a year, I'd be giving a whole lot of it away. And partly it would be ethical, but partly, I just don't want to, I can't consume that much. I don't want to live in an 8,000 square foot house. I don't want to drive some enormous fancy car. I don't know. I mean, the only thing I like to do is travel
right.
If I have disposable income. And if you're working all the time, you can't travel very much.
That's true.
So I don't even need much money, and I don't have any kids, so why wouldn't I just go like to the Earth Island Institute and say I was making $20 million a year and say, hey guys, here's $5 million, and you know, they'd probably name something after me and all that.
Yeah, I grew up, you know, it was no work, no eat, and I was taught to work, and, you know, I have a lot of farming in my background, And it was just, you know, we live a simple kind of life, and that's just, that's my personal view. You know, you can't take it with you, and there's no point in accumulating that much wealth when there's other people around you that could use it, you know.
On the other hand, craftsmen, like it sounds like you are, craftsmen, tradesmen, slash, that actually are part of an old tradition that improve the community by making it more aesthetically pleasing, aren't rewarded very well. I mean, some people are, and I'm sure that, you know, if there's people restoring barns out in Westchester County, you know, outside of New York and Connecticut, they probably making more than 30 grand or something like that. But And also the people that do the things that are very necessary to this society. I mean, like I always say, who would you rather see a strike by, lawyers or garbage collectors?
There you go.
Yeah, there
right
you
there.
Go. Who's more important then, you know? So we all deserve to be rewarded. I mean, if we want to have a system in a society where some people are rewarded disproportionately because they do this or that, okay. Let's do it. On the other hand, let's recognize that there ought to be some concept of a living wage, and that everything that people do ought to have respect along with it. I mean, if we want to, people go, "Oh, I just flip burgers." Well, you know, I mean, people got to eat, and the idea that someone is involved in the process of doing that ought to be respected.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at how many really wealthy people just look down their noses at people in the service industry. It's really sad.
Gotta go, John. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Have
right.
a good evening.
Bye-bye. And if I ever need to restore a barn, we didn't get him.
What a cool thing. I'm glad, you know, because you see all these dilapidated barns all over the place. So,
by the way, and he said, you know, anybody that doesn't like gay marriage should marry somebody of the opposite sex.
Yeah, don't worry about what other people are
doing.
But
now Washington, D.C. is allowing gay marriage, and from what I've read is that about half of the heterosexual marriages have fallen apart.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there they go.
52%. Right?
Right.
52% right now, divorces.
No, I meant because of they've allowed it all to...
sorry,
maybe
Peter.
That's why.
I was looking for my other story.
Yeah, but, you know, again, I would throw that out to people. If someone can tell me how gay marriage hurts heterosexual marriage, please call.
Please. It's just baffling to us.
Yeah, the fact that you may not like it isn't something that we want to put into law. So, you know, a lot of time, I think it was about 50 years ago or so, some white people didn't like black people coming in.
Yeah, remember that?
Right, yeah. Remember that? Because they didn't like it. I don't like them coming into my store, drinking from my drinking fountain.
Right.
Stuff like that.
The back of the bus, remember that? Mm-hmm.
So there was something like a constitution, equal rights, equal protection under the law and all that.
I think everybody counts, really. You know, I don't know about you, Peter, but... I'm there.
You're a red. You're totally red. Yeah. So
and proud of it. Well, there was another story kind of along this topic in Jackson, Mississippi. This 18-year-old girl who wanted to go to prom. Well, she happens to be a lesbian, and she wanted to go with her girlfriend.
There's gays in Mississippi?
I guess so. I would move if I were her. But, so they decided because of this one girl who's 18 years old that they were going to call off the prom so they couldn't go to it. I mean, seriously, I really, once again, what century are we in, Peter?
Yeah.
And I said to myself, what do they think they're going to, you know, strap it on and do it in the middle of the prom?
What time is it?
No,
it's after midnight. It's okay.
What's wrong with these people?
And
now she's got the ACLU helping her out, so we'll see.
And she wanted to wear a tuxedo. They said that. But,
oh, how dare you bend that gender, you crazy little wench. How dare you?
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. The online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring Be Aware Home Inspections in Rochester and Gourmet Everyday LLC in Walled Lake.
Jackpot!
Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
101 The Riff.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half-off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else.
This week's featured deals are Be Aware Home Inspections in Rochester and Gourmet Everyday LLC in Walled Lake.
All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
It's Saturday. You and your wife take the boys to the mall, straight to the food court. Your wife and Pete head for tacos. You and Danny want Chinese. You look up at the menu for a few seconds. You look down to see what Danny wants. But you don't see Danny. Your eyes dart around frantically. You instinctively call out,
Danny! Danny!
From the taco place, you hear a voice.
Hey! Dad! Change my mind!
Every parent knows that feeling when, even for a few seconds, you lose sight of your child. Imagine if he or she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our final segment. Tonight at 1 a.m., I'm going to be interviewing Daphne Weisham. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she's also been involved in something called the Story of Cap and Trade. If you don't know what Cap and open trade is. I'm not going to start explaining it now. She will. It's a scam, but she says that the human human-caused global warming continues unabated and calls for immediate remedial steps to halt its progress, or it's going to get real nasty out there. So that's at 1 a.m. And let's see. Here, Mike and Troy writes, he's been listening ever since you used Jeff Beck's Freeway Jam as your theme. And he says, I'm a former liberal. Oh, what happened? You moved to Troy, Mike? I mean, actually, you get an idea what's happened there. They had a millage there that failed. They're going to have to lay off like a third of their police force and
it's terrible.
Close their library.
Oh.
And maybe some of these billionaires that these people are defending could maybe pay for that. Anyways, your arguments for not going one-on-one with this religious nutball, that's not what
Several people have suggested, yeah.
That I,
You're calling him.
This guy that thinks that the Earth is 6,000 years. I'm not going to even give his name. Are typical, weak, and very intellectually dishonest of your life philosophy. Personally, you wouldn't stand a chance. Hey, man. If your positions are so rock solid like you make them sound, then you should be able to shred the guy. I may not agree with everything he says, but I still think he's a straightforward thinker. He's an idiot. I mean, his premises are ridiculous. But here's the thing, Mike. And I think that I've said this previously when I've talked about this before. I don't know why people want me to debate him, but there's an old Detroit saying. If you're standing on the corner talking to a fool, the passerby can't tell who
the fool.
Yeah. Right. So it ain't going to be me. And I'm not going to give this guy any free publicity. Okay.
I'm amazed at how many. I mean, there have been several people who have suggested that to you.
I don't get it.
It's bizarre.
I don't get it. Anyway, I mean, there's. Actually, Craig, hold on and I'll get you on the air in half a sec. You got to have some shared premise. And, I was thinking about that, about. I'm just arguing, does God exist with this religious nut? And then I thought, I'm going to work my butt off, to prepare. Maybe I don't. I probably could do it off the top of my head. Craig, hi, you're on the air. It's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
Peter and Jolene, what happened to the election?
What election?
Which one?
I called you guys about a year and a half ago, and I said, Peter and Jolene for president.
Oh!
What happened?
Oh,
yeah, we've almost won.
2012.
Almost won.
2012.
Okay, I was going to call about that bridge car thing.
Sure.
I work with two guys. One full-time, one every so often. Both of them get bridge card.
Uh-huh.
And both of them get state health coverage. Both these guys, now, this is back a little ways, but... more recently, they're tracking all these guys. They take their medical card. They complain, oh, I got a sore back. They go get these pills and sell them on the street. But they're the ones that come to work and bitch and scream. They're not making no money, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with their food stamp card. They'll take a $200 food stamp card and sell it for
Before you go on too much, Craig, give me a general, because, there's a subtext here. So give me the headline. I mean, what do you draw from this? So you've seen some people that, in your estimation, are abusing a very, very, given the economic climate and the unemployment and what have you, what do you take from this? What's the assumption? Would you say the vast majority of people that are getting state aid are scamming, or a high percentage, or I mean,
probably a high percentage, because I caught the beginning of your show when the guy from eCourse who said he had climbed the ladder and he had made it. You know what I'm saying? But he's living in eCourse, which is a poor suburb.
Sure,
of Detroit,
some of it is. Yeah.
I mean, I live in Wyandotte. I mean, I'm right
downriver. Yeah, yeah.
I go to work. I make a living. I don't make anything like I used to make. I'm a contractor, just like John from Ypsilanti.
Mm-hmm.
But and this guy's a contractor. He used to have the world by the ass. But, I mean, now he's on aid. I don't know how he got on aid, but he got on aid.
You know, it is amazing how many. I mean, you would think from the anecdotes that I hear on this show that that there's nobody legitimately getting any state aid. That everyone seems to know, have seen someone, and actually, Craig, the ones that I really wonder about are the one where the people that see people. These are white guys that see African Americans in Detroit misusing these bridge cards, and we should tell people who are listening in other states or around the world. This is.
Equivalent of food stamps.
And I'll tell you, one of the things that happens, one of the ways that the poor do get by, are some through different different scams, and you know, they're usually penny ante, but they're usually galling. I mean, and sometimes if you see somebody, if you're not making very much yourself, and then you see somebody even at a lower level or at the same level you are taking advantage of something, well, that's a pisser. I mean, I don't disagree with that, and like I said, I don't think anybody has the right to abuse a system that's set up for people that are really in need. But two things: one, overwhelmingly, the people that are on state assistance, and see, the implication always is of these conversations that these programs are suspect, that really the poor don't need this, and when they do have them, they take advantage of them, not to work or to misuse them by getting drugs and what have you. Well, there's Medicare fraud, there's Medicaid fraud, but the great frauds of this society are at the top. And I don't mean to say that we should ignore the little ones or the pinpricks, but right now...
Because, Peter, he used to be, you may not know this, an investigator.
I used to investigate welfare fraud and, didn't find a lot of it, to tell you the truth. Did find some, and the amounts involved were pretty penny ante, but the broadsword, the pinpricks, are that. I mean, that and you can say death of a thousand cuts, but that's not going to kill us. What's killing us is the broadsword of the people at the top that are wielding, the scams that are looting the whole system and that are sinking the ship. All right, Craig, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see. Here's the always patient Maurice from Detroit. Maurice, hi, you're on the air. Maurice, are you with me?
I don't hear him. Is he turned up?
I'm doing everything right.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to put him back on hold. Maybe we'll see.
I hear nothing.
It sounds like, let me see.
Where the sound of silence.
The sound of this, yeah. Yeah. I think they're coming to town. Simon and Garfunkel.
They are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Saw that today.
Is Jerry in St. Clair Shores? Jerry, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Good to hear from you. I don't know where to begin because I have several comments to make, but I'd like to start out about talking about this tax structure and the progressive and conservative and whatnot. And I think that the people, the wealthy, who have benefited the most from the system should pay in proportion to what they've benefited from the system. But instead, they insist on their capital gains tax cuts, their profit windfall tax cuts, and inheritance tax cuts. It's like all the opportunities they've enjoyed, they don't want to provide funding for that for anyone else and kick the ladder out from everyone else.
Well, sure. And what is particularly with capital gains, and that's where the vast majority of their increase in wealth have come under the Bush administration, who just gave it away the store to the wealthy, you can have it. You can have a tax structure any way you want. This way, it overwhelmingly favors the wealthy, and it's a redistribution of wealth from the middle class, particularly. Actually, it's the middle class that's lost the most. The middle class has redistributed the wealth that we earn to the ultra wealthy, and you get these working class guys from downriver defending that. I don't get it.
Yeah, well, that's all part of the war on the poor mentality this country has come to, and I've heard it said so many times this evening. People get all angry and animated at people who have no power, no wealth, no resources. Just exactly how many choices do these people have? And they say it's all about personal choice. But instead of being the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we've had a strong tradition of speaking truth to power and standing up to these people and say, hey, do your part, we look at the poor, you know, and we get all quiet talking to power and saying, well, you know, we can't speak out because of Atlas Shrugs. What will we do without them? And instead we've become the country of the cowardly and complicit, the way we take it out on these people.
Well, that's the authoritarian personality, that you never dare challenge the authority figures above you. And it comes from being immersed in an authoritarian family, where then the wealthy and the politicians and the people in the militarists, they become the stern father figure who you would never dare to challenge. But those below you, women, children, poor, people of color, what have you.
Beat up on the little guy. It's a lot
beat
easier.
Beat up on the little guy.
It's a lot easier. Yeah.
So, I mean, I always say, ultimately, and I can't say the word on the air anymore, but they're psychoanalytic chicken. Begins with an S.
Uh-huh.
Because they're sometimes even really tough men and very angry women. And but as soon as they get in front of their betters, it's like they're like
having
their hands. Yes, sir.
Whatever you want, sir.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, thank you. Well said.
Or ma'am. Could be ma'am.
Yeah. let's see. Okay, Maurice may be back. Maurice, are you there? Maurice, I don't think you're there, man.
I think Maurice fell asleep.
I think he did. All right. Let's see. Anybody else want to defend the rich? Anthony, hi. You're in Troy. You're on the air. Hey, Anthony. Anthony.
I think he hung up.
Yeah, well, I'll put him on hold, too.
Hello?
Oh,
no.
Wait a minute, Anthony.
Anthony.
Hey, Anthony. Anthony, hi. What?
I'm here.
Good, you're on the air. Go ahead.
What's going on?
No, nothing, man. What's up?
Just doing this little talk show. What?
Yeah, we're just...
What's the topic? I've been on hold for like an hour and a half.
So you've heard it all then?
I mean, I've been sitting here listening, but...
What did you want to talk about?
I want to talk about everything.
Well, okay. Go ahead. Start.
That's big.
Start. The clock is ticking.
What do we want to talk about? What's the subject right now?
It's whatever you want it to be. That's the beauty of this show.
All right.
Pick one.
The other night I was listening to the show, and hello?
Yeah,
we're
hello,
here.
Hello,
we're
hello,
listening.
We're bated breath.
Oh. I was listening to the what everyone does when they, the moment spot, right? Well, this girl.
Say what?
I think he's talking about the moment.
The moment fucking.
Whoa, Anthony, you're out of here.
Hit
you
it.
Said the magic word.
Hit it.
You
yeah.
said the magic word, so you are out of
okay.
here. Dude.
Dude.
Yeah.
Sleep
yeah.
her off.
Yeah, sleep her off. George Thorogood. George Thorogood. I just looked at this. May 27th, George Thorogood and the Destroyers are going to be at Caesars in Windsor. And one of the songs I like the best, I was just thinking of this guy. I Drink Alone. You know that song?
Sure do.
Good song.
All
bad
by myself.
Bad idea, Anthony. Because maybe you weren't alone. Here's Steve and Troy. Steve, I hope you can do better than Anthony. Now you're not in the same house with him, are you?
No, but good. It'll be hard to follow that guy.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it'd be real easy.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the millage vote here in Troy.
Yeah.
Mexico,
yeah.
And I just don't understand that at all, because just last November we threw off some crazy Christians off the city council.
Yeah.
And then 3-4 months later turned right around and vote that down. It doesn't make any sense to me. But the real reason I called was I have a lot of trouble getting through to my friends about how you know, getting politically involved and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to not be. But when given a chance to sit down and with 5 minutes to explain that, you know, people who go out and work, and I think most of my friends understand the progressive income tax part of it, but they don't understand that people who just sit on their money and just collect interest or dividends or stuff like in capital gains, they pay a much lower tax rate than anyone else who
sure.
ever goes out and actually works for a living. And that seems to be the only thing that can break through all this other noise. And once they kind of realize that, they get angry. And I had some friends go out and vote, you know, in 2008 for the first time. Some friends go out and vote, you know, in 2008 for the first time ever because they were, you know, just angry. And luckily,
hopefully, they haven't become teabaggers.
I don't think they're politically involved enough.
Yeah, they're not crazy
good.
Enough. Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, most people just don't understand that, you know, it's taxed at, what, 15%? And that's, you know,
sure.
it's ridiculously low for passive income that they don't work for.
No, I know. And I was just looking. The guy I was looking for earlier is S. Robeson Walton. He's the son of Sam Walton. He's worth $20 billion because Sam, when he died, split it up among his five kids. And, you know, they list what everyone does. There's a whole list here from Forbes of the top 20 billionaires in the United States. And no, I'm sorry, maybe it's in the world.
I think it's the world.
It's the world, yeah. And so they list what they all do. And they don't list anything that S. Robeson Walton does. They just list what his dad did. So he literally does nothing. Maybe he's the guy that sits around and tells tells the management of Walton of Walmart when if anybody unionizes, close the store.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
He's got a hotline.
Right wing crank.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I don't understand that. You would think too that that rather than all these millionaires and billionaires being far right wings, because well they do that because they want to keep all their money. And these stooges among these conservatives who are just, as I said earlier, carrying water for the rich, I mean, that's one thing. But you would think, I mean, like if I had $18 billion I would say, and I'd say, Walton's, I would do all this stuff so that that people would put my name in the Pledge of Allegiance. You know what I mean? I mean, you would give away so much money. I mean, like I said earlier, if you gave away, like he's worth $20 billion, so if you gave away $19.5 billion and just left yourself with a measly $500 million and did all of it for charity and public works and curing disease, and people would say, geez, that's the greatest man in the world.
He could even fake it a little. Yeah. I mean, just even a little.
Yeah, he didn't give away anything. All right, Steve, actually, I got to get some last calls. Thank you for yours. And let's see here. Here's Dominic and Taylor. Dominic, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I was the one that called in about a month ago.
Yeah.
I was talking about the welfare thing, and you guys were talking about how you shouldn't drug test them. And, like, I don't know if I said it wrong. I tried to make it so it wasn't a racial thing. But I guess I came off a little weird.
This is the guy who saw the black guy.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think
a lot of...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's not just that one time. I worked with a girl. She's white.
Well, there was 19. One other time? Oh, no.
She's 19. She just had a kid. Her husband is... a complete crap bag.
Well, wait a minute. Before you go through all of this, like I said to Craig, give me like a headline out of this. In other words, the headline should be that if you believe this, that fraud is so widespread that we should just eliminate any sort of help to the poor, the underprivileged, the out of work, the people that don't have health insurance.
Yeah, send the herd. Why not?
No. Or you should say that, or that we ought to instigate some pretty enormous resources towards tracking down fraud and illegitimate claims. But, you know, individual anecdote only suggests that and erodes the thought that we ought to be able to care for people that don't have the capacity to do it any longer but themselves. So is that it? Which of those two? Either that the system is so riddled by fraud and people making illegitimate use of it that we ought to just end it completely and let everybody off on their own, maybe maintain poorhouses like they used to during the 19th century.
Am I still?
You're on the
air. You're here.
Go ahead.
I grew up on welfare. My mom and dad were on Social Security. It's not like I don't make a lot of money. I make $26,000 a year. Me and my wife, we cannot get any kind of aid at all. She's unemployed right now. But it's like the girl I work with, her husband won't get a job. She complains about it. They get all kinds of state aid because they had a kid.
Well, wait a minute. You know, we're almost towards the end of my show. What I'm trying to get you to do is maybe this is a terrible person, and maybe they don't even deserve it. I don't know. But I'm asking you to make some general statement out of it, not tell me that, you know, when I was a welfare fraud investigator, I found incidents of fraud, people that actually were employed that were also getting welfare. So there is fraud. There's fraud in every system. As I said earlier, all you got to do is read the New York Times business section, and rather than someone scamming for $200 a month or something like that, there's people scamming $2 million, $20 million, $200 million, and what have you. So the big fraud in this country are the wealthy. It's not the poor person. On the other hand, like I say, if you're making $26,000 a year and you see somebody right next to you getting some advantage, courtesy of the state of Michigan, that you don't think they deserve, well, that's not anything that's going to sit very well, and I don't blame you. But you know what? Unfortunately, I have. No, no, actually, we got another couple minutes. So give me more of a policy statement rather than an anecdote.
Well, I'm not saying that they don't deserve it. I'm just saying that, like, they need to spend their money wisely. Like, they make sure they always have a certain drug, and, like, just being on state aid allows them to buy that because they don't have to worry about food.
Well, here is one of the things that we ought to look at. There's an old saying that poor people have poor habits, and it goes with the territory. I mean, you go to any country in the world, and where there's poor, there's crime. Where there's poor, there's ill health. Where there's poor, there's broken homes. Where there's poor, there's juvenile delinquency. It's a category which fosters those qualities, those definitions. What we really have to look at is, why do we have a country that's the wealthiest country in the world, where, as I was saying earlier from that article, which you may have heard, one more quote from it, most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the last year, where the wealth have gotten wealthier during the same period that great numbers of people in our communities have suffered greatly. Therein lies the problem. And if we're just going to spend our time, you know, complaining about the poor, that some of them are ripping off, you know, this pittance, that we miss the fact that the real thievery, the real corruption, the real distorting of this system comes from the top and the people that are that have all the wealth. All right, got to go home.
I'm more worried about the 20 million that the rich guy rips off, you know, rather than the $200 a month.
But I understand how
How they can be like, well, how can you do that? But
I mean, partly,
does
Dominic,
he know the whole story too?
Yeah, partly. You know, I sometimes people think one thing, and it's not even the case. But partly, Dominic, the thing I would wonder is, why do you work your butt off, which I assume you do, I think you said that one time, for $26,000 a year? And again, old S. Robeson Walton is worth $20 billion, never did a damn lick of work in his life.
And a third of it is going to, you know, your taxes. A third of that $26,000 is going for...
I think when you're at that level, I don't think you pay too much
money. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. All right. Jolene Jordan, thank you so much. Jade.
Thank you, Peter.
You're wonderful as usual. This will be a podcast if you want to hear it all again by noon today. And so you have a great week. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com.
That's the only time you've said that tonight.
Yeah, I know. I forgot it. A lot of great stuff on there. A lot about the Oscars, including The Hurt Locker. Michael Moore's DVD is just out, Capitalism, a Love Story.
Yeah.
A lot of good information there. Back next. Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. The online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring Be Aware Home Inspections in Rochester and Gourmet Everyday LLC in Walled Lake.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Do you see chalky water spots on your dishes and tub that drive you crazy? Those spots are a warning that your plumbing may have a serious limescale buildup. What you can't see is limescale clogging your pipes, breaking down your appliances, and blocking their heating elements. And that could be costing you $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove hard water limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare. Just visit bestofwater.com. HydraCare has been sold for years by the major utility in England as the ideal treatment to reduce and prevent limescale. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. Guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestofwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestofwater.com. That's bestofwater.com.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Detroit Rock Station 101, The Riff.
Our son would go from, "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. And, you know, many things in the world, even in the that I depend on reason so much and the scientific method and all of that, there's still a lot of things I take on faith, particularly things having to do with science. I think great minds have investigated this discipline over the last, 400 or 500 years, and come to some conclusions that seem to make sense when they're posed against reality. So I don't figure I got to know every single scientific detail. So when I was told by the scientific community, by climatologists, that there is global warming, that it is human-generated, that I took that for granted. The people involved were respected scientists. They had no dog in the fight, so to speak. But in recent months, that the whole idea that there is a global warming, or at least global warming caused by human beings, has come under attack, even to the point where there's something called ClimateGate, right? That's, you know, the ultimate scandal. Well, I thought I would get to the bottom of all of this by calling on the resources of the Institute for Policy Studies, and their website is ips-dc.org. And joining me is a fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies, Daphne Weisham, and she's a content advisor as well to the short film The Story of Cap and Trade. That's another thing that has to do with pollution and global warming and what have you. So please join me as we sort through all of this, and we welcome Daphne Weisham as we reach her in her office in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, there's so much there in my introduction. Does one need to go further than just sort of faith in than reigning scientific opinion?
Well, clearly, the American public has been subject to a lot of conflicting information on climate change. Depending on which television station you watch or which newspaper you read, you may be getting very different messages. So it's important to really understand the science behind the hype or the lack thereof around climate change, which is that there's no question that CO2 in the Earth's atmosphere is increasing, that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, and that this is causing the overall temperature of the planet to increase. What is interesting is just because we've had these massive snowstorms, all of a sudden some news outlets have been questioning whether, in fact, climate change is happening, when, in fact, massive snowstorms are actually entirely consistent with what we will see as the planet warms. And why is that? That's because as the atmosphere gets warmer, it can hold more moisture, and in fact will hold more moisture, which will then come down in more heavy precipitation events. So you'll see heavier, you know, both heavier rainfall in some parts of the United States, as well as record snowfalls. And of course, we've just witnessed that in Washington, D.C. A few weeks ago, where the city was shut down for the first time in its history as a result of just huge snow that
several feet of snow that fell over the course of a couple of days, and I'm sure the same thing has happened up and down the East Coast. You've probably gone through the same thing where you are.
Yes. Well, actually, it was odd. We didn't have a lot of snow, although most of it stayed on the ground, and it's still there now in my front yard. Well, Daphne Weisham, I have to say you're being kind when you refer to some of these outlets as news outlets. They certainly have news items on their websites, particularly, but there seems to be a political agenda here, or that all of this information saying that there is no such thing as global warming or there is no such thing as climate change, that there seems to be a very distinct political agenda, and one that I don't understand. What's your take on it?
Well, you know, it's much like the tobacco industry for years was confusing the American public about whether or not tobacco caused cancer, and they fought tooth and nail in various lawsuits, and finally were forced to admit, yes, in fact, tobacco does cause lung cancer and other forms of cancer. Well, the same sort of dynamic is at play right now with the fossil fuel industry. I mean, you think about it, we've got over 50% of our energy in this country is coming from coal. Coal is the number one greenhouse gas. It's the most carbon intensive of the three fossil fuels, namely oil, gas, and coal. And then we have some of the most powerful oil companies here in the U.S., like ExxonMobil and Chevron, that have just had record profits in the last few years. So these industries are not keen on seeing their profit margins decrease anytime soon, nor are their shareholders. And so they're putting out a lot of disinformation, confusing information. For a long time it was, you know, does climate change exist? No, they claimed, and then it was, well, climate change does exist, but it's a natural phenomenon, which of course is true, but that doesn't take you to the actual, you know, the scientific grounding of, well, yes, we do have climate change, and we have had climate change over the years, but what we have is something that's actually amplifying natural climate change, namely the human contribution to the atmosphere in the form of CO2, which is what happens when you burn fossil fuels, when you change land use, when you open up forests and clear them and change them to farms. All of this has an impact on the CO2 in the atmosphere versus the CO2 that's being stored in the soil or even under the soil in the form of fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question that is, in fact, happening. There are shades of gray on a couple of areas, you know, how quickly this is happening, what the consequences will be. But I just have to say that, you know, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is actually a fairly conservative body. It takes them years to come to consensus, and they have consensus among some of the most conservative countries, including, you know, countries like Saudi Arabia and Australia and the United States, who have not been progressive by any means on climate change. And yet the IPCC has clearly said that dangerous climate change is ahead if we do not change the trajectory of greenhouse gas emissions into the Earth's atmosphere. And we need to make some major changes now. In fact, we've got about ten years at the outside to begin to shift this curve downward of CO2 in the atmosphere. And in order to avoid this, what is called runaway climate change, where you have feedback loop on feedback loop, adding to the CO2 and other greenhouse gases in the Earth's atmosphere.
Daphne Weisham is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where we're talking about climate change. And you began your answer with essentially saying, which I think is always an excellent idea, follow the money. I mean, who stands mm-hmm. to gain or lose in a particular proposition? That doesn't entirely explain to me, and you may want to amplify it, of why the almost level of hysteria, and let's call the political tendency that opposes this over vociferously what it is. It's the far right wing. It's the conservative movement that says this is just some liberal canard foisted upon us by Al Gore, who is one of their hated icons. And so I mean, you know, and unless every one of these conservatives is just completely a tool for the fossil fuel corporations, there's something else at work here. I mean, there's a level of almost hysteria opposing the idea that climate change is occurring.
Well, you know, I mean, there are several, you know, it's hard to understand exactly what is going on in the psyche of some of these folks that are so hysterical, other than, you know, the one possibility is that it is such a big issue and it will require such major transformations in the way our society operates that perhaps it scares people. You know, perhaps there's some denial that anything could be happening on this scale and that, you know, we're better off just continuing with our way of life and not making the kinds of changes that are required. When, you know, even if climate change were not happening, let's just take that out of the picture and assume that they're right, that there is no such thing as climate change. We are still funneling billions of dollars into countries around the world, many of which are unstable, many of which are hostile to the United States. We absolutely need to begin to figure out a different way of fueling our economy than siphoning off, you know, huge quantities of money, not just in the form of oil dollars, but also in the form of military dollars to protect those oil and gas pipelines around the world and to topple regimes if they're not friendly to us. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Middle East and you see what's playing out there has an awful lot to do with our addiction to oil.
Yeah, well, I always think it's best to err on the side of caution. In other words, if we put into place all of these pollution-limiting programs, policies, alternative fuels and what have you, and there were the climate change turned out to be wrong, at least we'd be pumping millions of tons of less pollutants into the air.
Exactly.
We would this way. If they're wrong and climate change actually exists, we're in for a world of trouble. Literally a world of trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, it's not just about national security. It's also about we want to have an abundant source of energy for our children, our grandchildren. We don't want to have to pass this problem on to the next generation. We need to solve it ourselves. We know that these resources are finite. It's true that we do have vast quantities of coal in this country. However, all you have to do is go to West Virginia and see the kind of devastation that is being visited on that state in terms of mountaintop removal, blasting of, you know, entire mountaintops off and dumping the soil in the creeks and the rivers and the jobs that are being destroyed as a result of this mechanized approach to mining. And you realize that is not the way to go. That's not the kind of landscape we want to leave our children.
Well, there's also an element, and then I haven't even heard this fleshed out, that this is part of a long-term progressive, that's becoming now the new, you know, bad word on the right, the progressive agenda to redistribute income. I haven't heard how this all is supposed to be part of this long-term leftist progressive agenda. But I don't know what, you know, you used to be able to debate conservatives.
Yeah.
When they say things now, I don't even have an answer.
Well, there is, you know, I mean, part of what's going to have to happen at the international level, and this is where, you know, you do have to be straight with people. There is a part of the UN's climate agenda is not just to rein in greenhouse gases, but also to help the poorest countries and the poorest within those countries adapt to rising sea levels, crop failure, all of the things that are anticipated as a result of climate change, environmental refugees, as islands go underwater, island states go underwater. that's going to cost some money. It's not going to be cheap. And Hillary Clinton at the Copenhagen climate negotiations said that she hopes to get in place $100 billion by 2020 per year to address the cost of all of these consequences of climate change. Of course, those costs are going to rise unless we start doing something now. Nobody wants to think about, you know, how it is that we're going to pay for these consequences, but they are an actual cost that those of us who have contributed the most to climate change are going to have to face up to at some point. So that, you know, on that score, whether you call that redistribution of wealth or whether you call that paying your climate debt or you call that, you know, being a good person, a good Samaritan and helping out those in need, that's something that the developing world is really feeling that they have a right to demand, given that they will be paying such a high price.
Well, interestingly, about 10 years ago, I heard Rush Limbaugh who say that these liberals want to take away your SUV. And that's already happened just because of the price of oil. And as we talk now, I was just reading in the New York Times today that they're expecting gasoline to go above $3 once again in the next few weeks. So that may be happening just as natural as global
warming. I don't think anybody's trying to take anybody's SUV away from them. I think, you know, what we need to do is make sure that we are clearly factoring in the costs of these SUVs. I mean, when SUVs became sort of a fashion statement as opposed to something that people really did need for their work or for, you know, depending on where they lived, it seemed to me that the signal that we were sending the world is we don't care how much we consume, we don't care about the environmental consequences, and you know the rest of the world is damned, and we'll do whatever we want. And of course, we do live in a world where there are global consequences for our actions, and thankfully, I think, you know, having the oil shock that we had in the last year or so did wake people up to the fact that, wow, it's really in my best interest to move towards a more energy efficient car, to begin thinking about how I'm going to be able to afford to drive this vehicle. You know, you want people to make those changes before they really have to pay a real high price at the pump.
Sure. Daphne Weisham is my guest. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. Well, we can't hear them, Daphne, but there's at least a few people listening to our broadcast that are screaming at the radio right now, what about ClimateGate? What about ClimateGate? This is, you know, the scientists are accused of hiding data, of covering up their errors, of errors of suppressing different views, and this just threw into the wastebasket the entirety of the science of climate change, according to the critics.
Well, the critics, as we mentioned earlier, you know, the critics have a dog in this fight, and they're very eager to, just like the tobacco industry, very eager to play down the solid science that remains. I mean, yes, there were some flippant remarks that were made by climate scientists about how he was using a particular trick to make sure that none of the climate skeptics came after his data. That wasn't the wisest use of language. However, what was somebody doing pilfering through his email? You know, why isn't there an investigation into whatever agency or corporation or individual was behind searching through thousands and thousands of pages of email that these scientists were thought they were sharing privately? I mean, that hasn't become part of the scandal, but nevertheless, that was clearly not a wise comment to make, and I'm sure they're going to be a lot more careful. Similarly, there have been a couple of other errors that were found in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change on Himalayan glaciers and sea level rise. However, the vast majority of the studies still stand. They are still alarming. We have still seen we've seen every year the evidence continues to grow. Not only is climate change happening, it's happening a lot faster than any of the scientists anticipated. I mean, when you talk to these scientists, they'll say, you know, privately that they expected to see the kinds of changes that we're seeing now at the turn of the, you know, at the end of the century. And they are a bit freaked out by the fact that Arctic sea ice is going to be all but gone in a matter of a few years, when they thought that wouldn't happen until the end of this century. So climate errors can be on both sides. You can have both an underestimation of what's actually taking place, as well as the few errors that have overestimated. For example, that, you know, rather than Himalayan glaciers disappearing by 2035, they're going to disappear by 2350. But still, that's alarming in itself. You know, this is, it's, we're not saying that Himalayan glaciers or glaciers overall are not disappearing. They are.
They are indeed.
And that's going to have
Peru,
a serious.
Yeah. Daphne Weishin, before we, in fact, I see we just have about 5 minutes left. You've, besides being a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, you are also a content advisor to the short film, The Story of Cap and Trade. And it's part of the story of stuff, which is, I would highly recommend people that they check out The Story of Stuff. And Cap and Trade, I think that's another one of these, both these areas. It's not very well understood exactly what it is, but also why there's such ferocious opposition to that, and whether or not it actually is adequate to deal with the problem of climate change. So,
well, here is where we part ways with some of our allies in the environmental community. Not all of them, but there are some who are very supportive of cap and trade as an approach to address climate change. And what we tried to do with this film, which you can watch, it's about 10 minutes at storyofcapandtrade.org, was to demystify what exactly cap and trade is about, and suggest that actually it's potentially a false solution, because it would allow corporations to get free permits to pollute, at least the way it was structured originally under Boxer, Kerry, and Waxman, Markey, under the House and the Senate bills. They had proposed that pollution permits be given away for free to the polluters, and this was going to create windfall profits for the polluters. And in addition, there's this thing called a carbon offset, which most people seem to have a positive view of, but in fact, carbon offsets are just a giant loophole for polluters to continue with business as usual and then claim credits by, say, investing in a tree farm somewhere. And so our short film tried to break this down in simple language. It, needless to say, created quite a controversy in the environmental community, because there were some groups that were very assiduously pushing for this cap-and-trade bill to move through the House and Senate. Interestingly, shortly after our film was released, a lot of the politicians finally said, well, actually, yeah, there are some problems with these offsets. This cap-and-trade approach is not without its faults. And in fact, Obama had said in running for president that he wanted, if there were going to be a cap and trade approach, he wanted 100% auctioning of all the pollution permits, which did not happen in either of these bills. So we're now at a different point in the conversation where we actually may see a much better bill move out of the Senate. It's still nowhere near perfect, but there is a bill, Cantwell Collins, which is what's called a cap and dividend, where the money that would be generated would actually come back to the American people in the form of a dividend every month, which is another way of putting a price on carbon, but also making sure that it's not a regressive price, where you're actually giving money back to those people that are investing in, you know, energy efficient vehicles and energy efficient houses and so on.
Well, what we'd like, of course, is zero discharge into the air, into the water, onto the land, and yet there, I mean, that seems so unrealistic, yet the companies that do this have profited immensely over almost over the centuries now, and and it seems that they should pay the cost, not be able to pass it along to the consumer in any form, and take some responsibility for the damage that they've done over the last 150-60 years. I'm sure that is nowhere near anyone's political agenda as being possible, though.
Well, it's what is simply known as the polluter pays principle, which unfortunately was sort of turned upside down in our estimation with the cap and trade approach, where the polluter was going to profit at least for the next few decades. And thankfully, that idea is being called into question. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. We need to restore that principle of if you pollute, you need to pay either a penalty or you need to be shut down as an industry if you're violating the laws. That's one other thing I just want to emphasize, which is while we're talking about market solutions, they certainly are not the only approach to dealing with climate change. We do have strong laws that we should rely on more as the climate science becomes more clear, such as the EPA's authority to regulate CO2 emissions. But instead, what we're seeing is senators saying, actually, let's get rid of the Clean Air Act entirely. Let's remove their authority to regulate CO2. And that absolutely must be challenged because these are backstop measures that are absolutely critical. Whether you have a market solution or not, we do need our strong laws to remain in place.
Well, thank you, Daphne Weisham, for having joined us. Daphne is a fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies. She's also a content advisor to the Story of Cap and Trade. You go to ips-dc.org, and the Institute takes on a wide range of social issues, this being an extraordinarily important one. Thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you for having me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Celebrate the luck of the Irish with the Riff this St. Patrick's Day. Join Meltdown and Sarah the Riff Rocker from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Malarkey's on Dick's Toledo Road in Southgate. For a $10 donation, you can get all an Irish-style breakfast along with a beer, all benefiting the Kids Safe Network. Also purchase a shamrock to help the cause. Please enjoy drink specials, pick up some green beads, and limited edition Riff St. Patrick's Day t-shirts.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-493-8159. Now you have qualified help in dealing with the IRS. This is the second chance you never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. Call right now for your second chance. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike DeCree from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Presenting great moments in FirstGov.gov history. For years, Americans have turned to FirstGov.gov for their government information. 2000, Mrs. Marilyn Gorman takes online government to new heights, applying for Social Security benefits before breakfast.
And got them. Okay, who wants pancakes?
2002,
In what later became known as the download heard round the world, the Duggins of Wichita print their own passport applications in their underwear.
Honey, get dressed. Looks like we're going to Luxembourg.
And 2004, firstgov.gov astounds Anna Maria Montero of Biloxi by promptly answering all her emails, no matter how often she asks a question about the government.
Sure, the U.S. government can get back to me every time, but that son of mine? Huh.
Make your own great moment. Log on today. Firstgov.gov. It's government made easy.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. One of the ongoing themes, I guess there's so many on this broadcast, but is the danger from nuclear power and nuclear war. And I think we tend to forget about all of this because Russia and the United States are no longer at each other's throats, so we're safe, right? Well, we'll talk about that. Nuclear power, we don't hear much about that anymore, so maybe that's all just been taken care of, and maybe those hundreds of tons of radioactive nuclear waste that have to be kept safe for about a quarter of a million years, maybe the government's found some way to deal with it. Maybe that's why we haven't heard too much about it. Well, sorry, folks, to ruin your morning, but there still are some problems. Joining me are the Brothers Against Nukes, and that's just sort of a fanciful title we made up for two friends of mine. Keith Gunter, who's co-chair of Peace Action in Michigan, one of the co-founders of Beyond Nuclear, and Paul Gunter, who's the director of Reactor Oversight at Beyond Nuclear. Keith is in the studio with me. Paul Gunter is in his office in Tacoma Park, Maryland, at Beyond Nuclear. Brothers Against Nukes, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much, Peter. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. No nukes.
Yes, no nukes. And that's not a new phrase exactly, is it, Paul? What's the origins of that? Does that go back just 30 years to that famous concert?
Well, actually, it goes back to a friend of ours, Harvey Wasserman, who coined it back in 1975 as we were forming an alliance in New England to oppose construction of nuclear power plants. You know, back then it was President Richard Nixon and Project Independence who said that we need 1,000 nuclear power stations by the year 2000 because of the Arab oil embargo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, you know, that's been an old ploy to promote the nuclear industry, and it, in fact, what started out as they called too cheap to meter and the peaceful atom, in fact, turned out to be too expensive to matter and a bomb. And it's really not changed. Now they're using a new ploy of climate change to suggest that we need to, again, seek energy independence through keeping nuclear power on the table, introducing clean coal. And these are the hogs at the trough that will actually squander the resources and the precious time that we have directed towards renewables, energy efficiency, and conservation, which is what's really needed to address climate change.
Now, Paul Gunter, you mentioned Harvey Wasserman. He's been a guest on this show any number of times, and I just mentioned in passing the No Nukes concert. And remind us about that. It was 1979 Madison Square Garden,
was it? Madison Square Garden, we had Jackson Brown, Bonnie Raitt, you know, just a whole
Bruce Springsteen, wasn't Bruce there?
Absolutely. You
Crosby,
name them,
Stills,
they were
Nash.
There.
Crosby,
and,
Stills, and Nash, your brother
absolutely.
Keith reminds us, yeah.
And they, you know, it was all a benefit concert to promote the No Nukes movement, which was quite strong at that time. It was the construction of these plants that really spawned all these alliances, from the Clamshell Alliance in New Hampshire to the Diablo, Abalone Alliance in Diablo Canyon, California. This concert basically supported that grassroots movement. Its theme was quite clear, and its theme's just as relevant today.
Mm-hmm. Keith Gunter, maybe you could speak to the idea just when I realized that concert, that famous concert of which we still play some of the music on this station, is it's 30 years ago, and here we're dealing with the same issues. I mean, has this anti-nuke movement been a flop?
I think not, Peter, because I think that the passage of time
bears out what we've been saying for 30 years. By the way, I wanted to say it's great to be back here in the studio with you after almost 25 years. I recall you had me in after I had my first article published in Metro Times in August of 1984.
About the same theme,
though. Is Fermi Next was the title of the article.
Oh.
And yet what we're talking about are a lot of the same issues that have been persistent. They're not going away. Reactor safety, nuclear waste, weapons proliferation, the horrible economics of nuclear power. None of this has gone away.
Mm-hmm. Well, you actually gave me some disturbing news as we walked in to record this broadcast on Earth Day. And by the way, a few days late to all you listeners, but happy Earth Day. And I hope everybody are aware of the issues that still confront us. That Fermi 1 that almost melted down. And
it did melt down.
It did melt
partial
down.
Partial meltdown.
Partial meltdown and gave rise to the book that still is very required reading. We almost lost Detroit. And now we have Fermi 2, and you would have thought, and it's coming to an end, right? It's going to be decommissioned because these bad boys only last about 30 years.
Not the way the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the industry, not in the direction they want to take us. They want to extend the licensing on these plants and further increase the risk of a catastrophic accident.
But give us the bad news if you feel
well, the
like
bad,
we do.
Well, the bad news is that you would think after Fermi 1 and Fermi 2 that no one would give thought to Fermi 3, but that's exactly what DTE Energy and the nuclear power industry are proposing.
This is to build a brand new facility?
Yes.
Huh.
Economically simplified boiling water reactor, which is an oxymoron, an acronym form, if I've ever heard one, because it's neither economic nor simplified. I think the price tag on the proposed Fermi 3 is something in the order of $10 billion, Paul. Was that right?
Well, nobody can really fix a price. You know, you're basically looking at a contrail of a skyrocket that even Wall Street says is unpredictable right now to know ultimately what the cost of completion will be.
Well, obviously it can't be built then because private industry can't afford it, and I'm sure private insurers wouldn't insure it, so it can't possibly get built, right?
Well, unfortunately, the power of the nuclear industry lobby has, while they can't get financing from Wall Street, they've got Congress going where bankers fear to tread with the promise of legislation for tens, even hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. taxpayers to loan money to the nuclear industry to cover these uncertain but incredible costs of nuclear power, and even with the Congressional Budget Office saying that in all likelihood there'll be 50% default rate. So we're talking about a whole new realm of toxic assets now that Congress is going to front if they get away with it to an industry that is historically, notoriously known for the inability to meet these promised costs of completion and time to completion. So cost overruns and incredible schedule delays. We're seeing this play out today with these so-called advanced reactors designs in Flamanville, France, and in Finland. The Finland project is 3 years into construction and already 3 years behind and 50% over budget and still rising. The current experience in reactor construction overseas reflects that there's really no reason to anticipate any change here in the United States should construction begin.
Mm-hmm. And if I can just piggyback
on
that.
Go ahead.
What Paul alluded to a little while ago was a series of myths, and he alluded to one in particular that we're hearing a lot of now, and that is nuclear power as a primary weapon against climate change. The point here is that MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, I believe did a study 3 years ago that concluded to even begin, for nuclear power to even to begin to mitigate the effects of climate change, that we would have to construct at least 1,500 new nuclear power plants globally.
Between 2010 and 2050. That's like one every 3 weeks.
Yeah, what happened to the figure that that Richard Nixon said was necessary by 2000, 1,000 nuclear power plants in the United States? How many do we have operational now?
104. Yeah. They were decimated. And it wasn't just the opposition, although we certainly helped in turning public opinion, as well as the Three Mile Island accident. But in fact, the industry had a financial meltdown well before the actual meltdown at Three Mile Island. So the industry was already going south with these colossal costs overruns. And so, roughly 50% of the plants that were ultimately ordered, which was about 253, were canceled either before construction or during construction, and leaving hundreds of billions of dollars in stranded costs,
mm-hmm.
Which ratepayers as well as taxpayers had to pick up.
Let me reintroduce you guys. I'm talking with the Brothers Against Nukes. It's Keith Gunter, who's the co-chair of Peace Action Michigan, also the co-founder of Beyond Nuclear. His brother Paul Gunter, who is the director of reactor oversight at Beyond Nuclear, Keith is in our studio. Paul is in his office in Tacoma Park, Maryland, where Beyond Nuclear is located. And is that your web site, just beyondnuclear.org?
Yeah, if you Google Beyond Nuclear, you'll get our websites, www.beyondnuclear.org.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Now, we're recording this on Earth Day, and President Barack Obama, who says he's very committed to the environment, is in Iowa, and he's touting a wind turbine factory, and this is going to be the future of energy. What is Barack Obama's position on nuclear energy and building new nuclear power plants?
Well, unfortunately, President Obama is not really being clear.
Are you being nice? Are you being nice, Paul, when you say
he's nice?
Okay, go ahead.
We're parsing every word that he makes, but what he said, particularly his most recent speech in Prague, Czech Republic, was that nuclear power has to be harnessed for climate change. And in fact, he actively seeks to promote nuclear power around the world, and says that in so doing, we also don't really have to worry about non-proliferation of proliferation of nuclear weapons. And these are all qualified statements, that we harness nuclear power. Well, in fact, the problem today is that the reins are in the hands of the industry and the bit is in the mouth of the regulator. So we see time and time again examples of where public health and safety, security, environmental consequence, these are all subordinated to production and profit margins of the nuclear industry. And the industry, it's the nuclear industry that's calling gee and haw as they steer regulators from one direction to another at the expense of our health and safety. The same is true all around the world where governments in fact are active promoters of nuclear power, and we've got to turn the corner right now. One of the big concerns about Obama's speech in Prague, which was in the context of nonproliferation, was that right now we've got 13 countries in the Middle East and North Africa that are looking to develop nuclear power. And in the transfer of that civilian technology, you get the flip side of that coin is nuclear weapons. We've got the example of North Korea, which signed the non-proliferation treaty that they would only develop peaceful nuclear power. As soon as they got their materials, they withdrew from the treaty. They developed nuclear weapons, and most recently they just fired what conceivably be an intercontinental ballistic missile. The non-proliferation treaty is basically a gentleman's agreement, a handshake that then can be walked away from. There's much concern right now about Iran developing nuclear power at Bushehr, when what we're really concerned about is that Israel doesn't really believe that Iran's sole purpose is to develop peaceful nuclear power. And as Israel bombed the Syrian reactor that was under construction in September of 2007 in a very quick aerial decommissioning operation, as they also bombed the Osirik reactor in June of 1981, killing two French engineers in the process, we're quite concerned that even the presence of construction of nuclear power plants destabilizes regional peace in the Middle East as well as global security.
I was going to say that what did Napoleon say about bayonets? The only thing you couldn't do is sit on them. And we've been lucky for the last 50 years or so. But as the proliferation grows and the capacity of smaller nations to develop weapons as well as the power, it does get scary.
Now, if I may jump in here for a minute.
Let me ask you a question. Keith Gunter,
sure.
Who's in our studio. Let's go back a little to the nuclear power plants here. I said at the beginning of the show that the government must have found some way to dispose of the waste that comes out of the plants that is so radioactive that it has to be kept secure for quarter of a million years. Remember, in evolution, our species developed into what we are today about 50,000 years ago. So this seems like almost an impossible task. But have these scientists or bureaucrats in Washington, Keith, solved the problem of where to deal with the nuclear waste?
No, they certainly have not.
I thought they were going to just bury it at Yucca Mountain and the end of problem.
Well, as a matter of fact, the Obama administration recently proposed a severe curtailment of the funding of the Yucca Mountain Project, and there are good reasons for that. The first one is that, folks on both sides of the nuclear issue agree that there are two fundamental prerequisites for the safe long-term isolation of nuclear waste from the environment. One is seismic stability. Two is an absence of water. Yucca Mountain fails both of those tests.
And what's the price tag so far on Yucca Mountain that the U.S. government has invested of taxpayer?
Tens of billions of dollars. Do you have the precise number, Paul?
Well, they're pulling these figures out of their hat. They're saying it's about $96 billion right now. But who's going to pay the cost 1,000 years from now? When, they have to recontainerize this stuff. They don't really, when you talk about nuclear power, electricity is but a fleeting product. It is the legacy is nuclear waste. And it will be there for geological spans of time, and somebody's going to have to deal with it, or not.
And this is regardless, if we stopped all nuclear power plants today, on Earth Day.
58,000 metric tons here in the United States.
Say it again. What's the figure?
58,000 metric tons. There's probably about 600 metric tons sitting at Fermi 2 right now in a pool that's 6 to 10 stories up in the reactor building. Now, that makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck, knowing that a pool filled with hundreds of tons of nuclear waste sits in midair like a sore thumb. There are, how many airfields do you think are within 10 miles of Fermi 2 that are, general aviation aircraft where somebody could, climb into a rented plane without screening the pilot, without a reinforced cockpit door, without passenger screening, without cargo screening, perhaps load this thing up with high explosive and within 15 minutes fly it into Fermi 2. That's a thought that is not, it's not really being addressed, although we've been sitting down with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Department of Homeland Security, that we've got 23 of these kinds of reactors, the General Electric Mark I boiling water reactor, like there at Fermi. There are six of these things sitting around Chicago. And nobody's addressing that these things are really pre-deployed weapons of mass destruction, that, you know, if somebody develops a method of getting at them, could, according to the National Academy of Sciences, cause tens of thousands of fatal cancers out to 500 miles. Not a 10-mile emergency planning zone like Fermi. We're talking hundreds of miles. We're talking contaminating the Great Lakes. And it's this kind of catastrophic potential. I don't know. I think it sort of numbs most people.
Well, I imagine so, and part of the problem is it's not like you can say in the next couple of sentences, here's what we can do. But what if Paul Gunter and maybe Keith Gunter as well, you can answer this, that people say, hey, look, it's been almost 60 years since we've had this stuff around. You guys are painting the worst-case scenario. You're Chicken Littles.
Well, listen, if we're Chicken Littles, let me just tell you where we're coming from. The Atomic Energy Commission used to say that nuclear accidents were flatly impossible. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which was formed in the wake of the dismantlement of the AEC because the AEC was perceived to be too much of a promoter of nuclear power, in the Rasmussen report in the late 70s, postulated that nuclear accidents were next to impossible. Within 3 months of the release of the Rasmussen report, Three Mile Island came within an hour of a total catastrophic meltdown. 7 years later, Chernobyl exploded in our international consciousness. So the industry has gone from saying, and the regulators have gone from saying that nuclear accidents are flatly impossible. In April of 1985, the NRC testified before Congress saying that what they figured to be the crude statistical probability of another major accident to be 45% over a given 20-year period, given 100 reactors operating.
And they're talking about building more, but
I'm saying is that we are using the NRC's own testimony before Congress in April of 1985.
As we sit here today,
it could happen anytime.
To answer the charge that you're only looking at the worst case scenario, the problem is, I mean, if you, Keith Gunter, or Paul Gunter, when either of you guys drive home, there's a certain probability that you could get in an auto accident. But there's the real probability is that you would walk away probably with very little damage to your person. We're talking here where there's very little room for error or harm-free error.
Paul, why don't you refer to Davis?
Well, let me just say this.
We got about 2 minutes left, too, guys.
I know. So. It's funny you should bring up the auto accident scenario, because if you look at the February 1986 issue of Soviet Life, which was published just months before the Chernobyl accident in Kiev, Ukraine, the Soviet Life, its feature cover story was on the promise of Chernobyl. And in fact, I had an interview with one of the operators there who said the likelihood of an accident at Chernobyl is about, you know, is less than me getting in my car and driving off home at night.
Yeah, but
a few months later, the thing blew its lid.
Aren't we to have much, much better technology, that there are no more Fermi 1s, there are no more Chernobyl-type plants? Now we've got modern, the scientists have perfected
these. We have Davis Bessie, Peter, where
Right, that's the old ones. I'm talking about...
I'm talking about outside of Toledo, Ohio, in 2002, it was discovered a boric acid leak ate a football-sized hole in the top of the reactor vessel, leaving 3/16 of an inch of stainless steel inner lining between us and another accident, at least on the scale of Three Mile Island.
Let me interrupt you a second, because we're almost out of time. As you know, I was playing the devil's advocate. Many people say I am in any event, but whatever. And
I can see your horns.
from over the phone, no less. But hey, we got about 60 seconds. Do we just put our head between our legs and kiss our butt goodbye? I mean, what do we do?
No, I think that we have to basically educate the public. We have to take it to the ballot box. We have to take it to lobby our representatives. And, in fact, we have to take it to direct action at some point. But, in fact, if you want a safe energy future for not only for this generation but for generations to follow, we have to take action now, today.
And one of the things you can do is go to the group that Paul Gunter is the director of research oversight with. It's Beyond Nuclear, and you can go to beyondnuclear.org. There'll be also a link on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, peterwerbe.com. And Keith Gunter, you're co-chair of Peace Action Michigan. Is there a website for that? He's go ahead.
www.peaceactionmich.org.
All right, and there'll be a link there as well.
.com, excuse me.
Keith Gunter, Paul Gunter, thank you for, I mean, we've had clarion calls before. Here's another people, and I think Paul Gunter and Keith Gunter have it right. It's good to talk about it. It's good to learn about it. We've got to act. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. Do you see chalky water spots on your dishes and tub that drive you crazy? Those spots are a warning that your plumbing may have a serious limescale buildup. What you can't see is limescale clogging your pipes, breaking down your appliances, and blocking their heating elements. And that could be costing you $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove hard water limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare. Just visit bestofwater.com. HydraCare has been sold for years by the major utility in England as the ideal treatment to reduce and prevent limescale. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. Guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestofwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestofwater.com. That's bestofwater.com.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
This is your Travel Minute.
If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
Jeez, Q, it's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet?
No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
No.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Bring you back to the rock. I got something that'll make you feel better.
101 WRIS.